United Nations is welcoming the 5 billionth person alive in the world.
The White House today denies reports the U.S. sent weapons-related equipment to Iran as late as last month. The recent scandal at the PTL ministry are taking a toll on the credibility.
Kim Baker resigned.
Let's go! or 1-800-530-WSOM. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
Good morning and welcome to Tracy and Friends here on WSLM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. It is 8 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock here on WSOM AM 600. And today is the 9th of July, 2014. Hope you're having a good day today. Today's Wednesday, and I'm sitting here with Six as usual. Tomorrow's going to be a crazy day because Dr. Mason went on vacation, and so I got to check with Dr. Brandy and make sure she's coming in, so see how we're going to do health and wellness. But today, I've got a friend in studio with me. And his name is Perry, and he has, in my travels, I run across a lot of people with a lot of interesting things. And I ran across Perry, and Perry has a furniture polish and a car polish. And this furniture and car polish is amazing. You know, I've used some of the name brands out there for quite a number of years. And, they try this, and actually I heard about it before he told me to try it from a colleague of his and from one of our vendors. We share the same vendors on some things, and so I took it and I tried it on my furniture and I tried it on my hardwood floors, and wow, what amazing life came back to them. Good morning, Perry. How are you?
Good morning. Fine.
So how you doing today?
I'm good. Glad to be here.
It's good to have you with us. So tell us a little bit about this polish. How do you come up with furniture polish?
Well, it's kind of a long story, but I'll shorten it. the furniture polish and the car polish are part of a whole new technology that we developed years ago. Originally, we started out to make a waterproofer, simply because we felt there weren't enough good waterproofers on the market. As we got into the new technology, we discovered it did a lot of other things. By changing the formula a little bit, we could develop different products. One of those products was the furniture polish. We manufacture the furniture polish and the car polish, which is a variation of the furniture polish, better on metal, furniture polish better on wood, but they have a similar background. We also developed a product called Penetrate, which regenerates asphalt, brings it back to life. Asphalt shingles, asphalt roads. It's an exciting product, but it's all part of this technology that we developed years ago. We've had the furniture polish out for, we did our original homework by having it tested by some professionals, housewives, etc. After the test period, we decided that we had a good product, in fact a great product. And then we proceeded to manufacture it, put it on the Internet. We have some dealers locally. We're anticipating that we'll be able to go nationwide with it, hopefully in the not-too-distant future.
Okay. Yeah. Now, where can people buy your polish?
They can buy the polish at Camel Hardware, Lowry Fuller Furniture, Plunkett Furniture Rebuilding on Salt Springs, and Old Stagecoach Antiques.
Okay.
Is there any plans to have a internet distribution?
Yes. We're actually, we've been on the internet, but we're upgrading that site right now. And it looks like, as I mentioned, we'll probably be adding a gun polish to the product line. So,
and when do you expect to see that out for use, or out for sale?
I'd say probably 30 to 45 days.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What do you use gun polish for?
The gun polish, we had requests from people who had used our car polish, for example, and they said, we think if you were able to make some changes, it would be a fantastic gun polish. So we went to work on it, and apparently we were able to get what they wanted in the product. We have it out for testing right now. The reaction we're getting back from law enforcement, private gun owners, is that the product is excellent. It does three different things in one polish. Cleans, polishes, and lubricates one material instead of three different ones, which basically is what they have now.
Okay.
We're excited about it, and we think it's going to be a great addition to our product line.
And how much does it cost? You have a 12-ounce bottle here. How much does it cost?
A 12-ounce bottle of furniture polish?
Yes.
Yes, it runs $10.
Okay. How long does it last?
A long time. We joke about it. We say maybe we should cheapen it up so it doesn't last so long. But, of course, we wouldn't do that.
No.
Same with the car polish. Out of a 12-ounce bottle of car polish, you can get anywhere from 5 to 6 complete cars out of that bottle.
Okay.
Does everything on the car. Paint, chrome, plastic, rubber.
And it protects them, too. But the car polish, tell us a little bit about the car polish.
The car polish, as I mentioned, actually does virtually everything on the car.
But what does it do? I mean, tell me, does it just polish it?
On the inside, does it take the place of say, an Armor-All?
Absolutely. Armor-All is a pretty thick, greasy material. I know when I was out in Hawaii a few years back, they said they wouldn't let them use Armor-All out there because if they put it on the dash with all the sun they got, it would crack the dash.
You could
use our material on any type of material on a dashboard.
Do you use leather?
Leather, absolutely.
Which product works best on leather? So if you have a leather furniture, will it moisturize it?
The furniture polish, yes.
Okay.
In fact, we have motorcyclists that use the car polish, for example, on their saddlebags.
Mm-hmm.
And they said it's better than mink oil.
Okay.
It actually penetrates and conditions the leather.
So what's your background? Did you just like start mixing stuff up in your basement and come up with this?
Pretty much.
And Perry's a local guy. He's right here in Youngstown, Ohio. Perry, where are you from?
Youngstown, Ohio.
Born and raised, huh?
Born and raised. I was out of town a few years, but basically this is it. I spent half my life in marketing. Was president of a couple companies, national sales manager for a couple companies. But I always had this technical desire. And so one day I just decided this is the time, resigned from company I was president of, came back to Youngstown and started doing research and development. That's basically what Mullinex Industries is,
okay.
A research and development company.
Now, is this vegetable-based, petroleum-based, animal-based, three of the above? Or?
Yeah, it's a proprietary product, obviously.
Right.
But it is a form of hydrocarbon. It's a very safe product. We are approved, for example, our solvent is approved by the federal EPA for use by the public. You'll see some things advertised as VOC exempt. That's an improper term. What it should be is that it has been ruled safe for consumer use.
What's VOC mean?
Volatile organic compounds. And they range all over the place. Some of the very...
Those are the vapors those are the vapors that get you... The paint vapors that nobody likes.
Yeah, they can result in vapors,
okay.
Sure. I don't want to get too technical, but for example, our vapor pressure, for those that are familiar with it, is 0.0015, which is virtually nothing. Our flash point is like 220 degrees Fahrenheit. It's a very safe product to work with.
Well, that's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
And let me ask you this. When you put it on, tell us how you use it. And then tell me how, you know, when you use furniture polish, tell us how do you apply it. I mean,
right. The best way is to take a soft cloth. It's better not to use anything that has, like, rayon or nylon in it. You don't want a cloth that stretches, just a cotton cloth.
Mm-hmm.
Put a little bit on the cloth, and it goes a long way. Same with the car polish. Put a little bit on the cloth, take it across your furniture, whatever you're polishing, and then come back with a soft cloth again and just lightly buff it. One of the things that has pleased our customers so much is that after using Perry's polish, you have no oily, waxy feel to it. It's a very smooth finish. In fact, it's kind of humorous at times. I'll be in a restaurant or something, and a lady will come up to me and say, "I just love your polish. You're Perry." I said, "Yes." She said, "I don't get as much dust." Well, they do, but it's so smooth that if there's any air movement in the room, it just blows off.
Okay.
Right. But long-lasting, we've had people that had very distressed furniture, and by applying Perry's heavily, putting a cloth over it, maybe for a day or two, and come back and put another coat on and buff it off, they were able to restore some very bad distressed furniture.
Okay. Oh, really?
Right.
So it does do some restoration to furniture.
Yes.
It gives it some life back.
Absolutely.
How about your car polish? Will your car will help with oxidation?
Oh, glad you brought that up. It will get rid of oxidation. It will get rid of old wax, but we don't like wax. Wax has a tendency to build up, hold dirt, even when it's shiny. Sometimes you can take our polish, go over the surface and pick up dirt. It's in the wax.
Mm-hmm.
So we have no wax in it for that reason. But the furniture polish can be used for a lot of things, not just furniture. We've had people do their whole houses with it. The furniture polish can also be used on, for example, pewter, can be used on your appliances like refrigerators, stoves, can be used on glass. If you have furniture that has big glass top on it, rather than have to remove the big glass top, the polish will actually work on the glass also.
Now see, for example, I have a ceiling in my living room that is tongue and groove.
Mm-hmm.
And from the years, it's drying out and it's starting to separate. Will your product put moisture back into that and help it too?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Boy, you've got great questions. Now, we can't close a quarter-inch gap or anything
right.
like that. But what the polish does, not just does it give a nice surface appearance, but it actually penetrates the coatings. I don't care whether it's lacquer, shellac, varnish, polyurethane, it becomes part of the coating. With repeated use, it's conditioning that coating. With repeated use, it actually penetrates the wood also to prevent dry out and moisture damage. Creates a breathable moisture barrier in the wood. On cars, the same thing applies. It actually becomes part of the clear coat. In doing a car with Perry's car polish, you've got one product instead of five or six that does everything on the car. And it lasts a long time. Most polish will last 30, 60 days. We have people that go 6 or 8 months, and it's still there. It's still there.
Well, it's a wonderful polish, and you can find it. Tell us where we can find it. I know Camel Hardware.
Camel Hardware has it. Believe it or not, Lowry Furniture carries the car polish.
Too. Good.
Yeah, they get calls for it.
Tell us where we can find the furniture polish first, and then tell us where we can find the car polish.
Sure, the furniture polish at Lowry Fuller, one of the oldest and finest furniture companies in town. It's also in Camel Hardware. They do a very nice job with it. Stagecoach Antiques in Poland, and Plunkett Furniture Refinishing on Salt Springs Road.
Okay.
It's interesting. Paul Plunkett is probably one of the finest refinishers in three states, and he has pretty much gotten rid of everything else except Perry's Polish.
Okay.
Right.
Now, where can I find the car polish?
Car polish, again, at...
Lowry's Furniture.
Lowry's Furniture, Camel Hardware, also Stagecoach Antiques.
Okay.
I don't think Paul carries the car polish.
Okay. Well, listen, I want to thank you for coming in and hanging out with us and talking with us. Did I miss anything? Did you want to tell us anything that we're missing?
No, I don't think so. I think you had great questions. Great questions.
Well, listen, I thank you so much. Perry's Furniture Polish, I have tried it. I will endorse it. It does a wonderful job. It does wonders. Now, it does wonders on your floor, but you must be careful when you go back to walk over them because you can turn them into an ice skating rink.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, but that's nice. It's nice. It gives them a nice coat, and it helps clean and refinish them.
You're not trying to make business for both of our clients, are you?
Who?
Doc Mason.
It can cause that. So if you slip on the floor after you put it on the floor, call Doc Mason and he can put you back together again. I have antique furniture as well as modern furniture in my home, and I use it on my nightside tables. I use it on my old furniture. I use it on my new furniture. Use it on my I have an old the old fashioned dining room table.
Mm-hmm.
Used it on there, and it does a wonderful job. My wooden bookcases, it does what it's supposed to do. And I've used another brand for a very, very long time, which is local also. And I will have to say Perry's Polish does a better job than that.
I know which one you're talking about.
That was the point, Perry. That was the point. Without saying any names,
you don't have to call them out. No,
I just could just say people know.
Right, exactly.
And it does a very, very good job. And so I would encourage everyone. I'm looking forward to using the auto because you guys know I got an old truck, and so I'm looking forward to using the auto polish one day. I don't know how it's going to get on there.
Your friend's down the road.
Yeah.
Is she looking at me or you?
I'm helping out again. Kingly. I'm going to take it down there and let Kingly use it. They say, put this on there.
Yeah.
Put it on there and then do the inside of the car and check out the polish. But I will say this, it's a fine product, and I would encourage everyone to go out as you go to find polish again. If you're traveling and you see it, pick it up and get a jar and say, you heard it on Tracy and Friends. I'd appreciate it. Perry, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Listen, I'm going to go take a break. I'll be right back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. We'll see you on the other side of my break.
Your car will look brand new after a professional cleaning at Kingly Hand Wash and Wax. All work is done by hand, which protects the paint, leaves no water spots. You won't believe how good it looks. Walk-ins are always welcome, or book an appointment for a full detailing. Thursday is Ladies' Day. Get an additional service free with any regular wash. Kingly offers pickup and drop-off service. They'll take you to work, an appointment, and pick you up when your car is ready. If it's not Kingly, it's not clean. Kingly Hand Wash and Wax.
Fit Family, unique, individualized, and promoting a healthy, active lifestyle. Fit Family on Route 46 in Austin Town designs a personal exercise program just for you, with your own personal trainer. Each client at Fit Family in Austin Town receives their own certified personal trainer with their membership. And at Fit Family, we listen to you and design a fitness program to the type of fitness you're looking for, with all the equipment you need for strength training, cardio, Pilates, and more. We also offer classes in Zumba, yoga, kickboxing, step, 5K training, line dancing, silver sneaker, and real rider cycling. Fit Family is open Monday through Saturday with hours that fit your schedule. Find out more about Fit Family in Austintown. Call 330-793-4466. That's 330-793-4466. Visit us on the web at fitfamily1.com. That's fitfamily1.com.
Concerned about your health? Confused about the amount of prescription drugs you are taking? Wondering which vitamins to take? Call Dr. Matt Mason, board-certified wellness physician as well as a chiropractor at Mason Wellness Center. Dr. Mason combines nutritional therapy, functional medicine, and chiropractic services to keep people healthy and get those of you that are ill feeling better faster. Mason Wellness Center is located on Layer Road in Warren, Ohio. To make an appointment or to receive additional info, call our office at 330-219-6450.
Let's talk for a moment about a great doctor. Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoney Valley. If you're looking for a doctor to help you with your prenatal needs or help with your decisions or questions about birth control, call 330-746-7007 and talk to Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoney Valley. And read the testimonials at aiwhealth.com.
I could not have had a better experience. Dr. Hill was always attentive to my needs and empathetic when the situation called for that type of sentiment. Dr. Hill's office environment and staff are pleasant and warm. Clearly, a good deal of care has gone into making the visiting experience a good one.
All patients receiving prenatal care get a free designer diaper bag. Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoney Valley only has one goal, ensuring your health so you could fully enjoy all of the times of your life. 1350 Fifth Avenue in Youngstown. Call 330-746-7007 and visit aiwhealth.com.
Geico presents Strange Savings Stories. Sam Tucker woke to find crop circles in his cornfield that spelled out the word Geico. Was this a message sent by aliens? Sam went to Geico.com and saved hundreds of dollars with great discounts. He woke the next day to find new crop patterns had formed. They spelled out, "You the man." It seems the aliens were pleased indeed.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Michael Savage.
Christie, he's the king of bacon. No kidding. The minute he embraced Obama, we knew already what we were getting. Christie showed himself to be a fat McCain without any military background. I mean, if you want to reduce it to its simplest term. Christie is a fat McCain without any military background.
Weekdays from 3 to 6 on News Talk 600.
We're back with Tracy and friends on News Talk 600 WSOM. 347-945-5229 or toll free at 1-800-530-WSOM. Online at tracyandfriends.com or 600WSOM.com.
Out the roof, because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like happiness is the truth. Because I'm happy.
Bring me down, can't none. Bring me down, you love it too. Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. I've got South Carolina and Eric in the queue. I'm going to pull you up in just a minute. Got a gentleman who has written a book called Black Submariners in the United States Navy from 1940 to 1975. His name is Glenn Coblock.
Noblock.
And he is a, and the foreword is by Rear Admiral Melvin G. Williams, Jr., and I'm going to let Sticks introduce the book because he has read it. This is his.
No, I didn't read it.
This is his cup of tea. I only thing I know about the Navy is they got crazy-looking suits. Hey, good morning. How are you, Glenn?
Very good. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. You didn't hear me singing, did you?
I did.
Oh. Sorry. It was your fault.
Well, you know.
You weren't in the room, Sticks, and I was stalling for time.
That's all right. You're all right.
It was a happy song.
Hey, Glenn, how about telling us about yourself?
I'm actually a native Ohioan. I live here in New England now, have for the last 30 years. I have a history degree from Bowling Green State University in Ohio, and one of my specialties is African American history, which I've been studying, documenting for the last 25 years. Particularly on the military side of things.
Okay, and this isn't the only book. Well,
I got a question for you.
Sure.
You an African American? Are you an African American?
I am not. I'm white as they come.
What in the heck made you interested in African American history?
Well, that's a very good question. As a historian, it's always been my interest to kind of document things that have kind of been left behind in history, and African-American contribution to American history is one of those fields that's ripe for exploration if people are willing to get out there and do the research, and that's been an area really since I was a teenager that has always interested me, so that's what I've kind of chosen to work in.
And if you go back, there's a very, very African Americans or blacks in the military is a very, very interesting read and or study.
It is, mainly because a lot of Americans don't realize that the African American contribution to our military, which began before the American Revolution and, you know, continues obviously to this day, but there's a lot of misconceptions about there. The submarine force is just one of them. There's, you know, Americans don't realize in general, you know, how devoted to their country our African American servicemen have been, and they've fought in every American war. Perhaps we know the Civil War the best because, you know, the movie Glory with Morgan Freeman and stuff. But they're, you know, they were vital contributors in World War II, even though they fought under segregated circumstances, and of course, America's, you know, first major war, the American Revolution, which I've also written about the black participation there. Black soldiers were key, especially from New England. So there's a lot of interesting stories about these veterans and the conditions in which they served. And, you know, again, that's been my goal is to get those stories out there. That's why I've worked for Harvard and Oxford University Press and their African American National Biography Project as their main military contributor to document the services of these mostly men and some women. So it's really interesting stuff.
How? I mean, you said you want to get people, you want to get it out there. How do we become more informed or better informed about African Americans in the military and their contributions, and how do we make that known? Because most black people don't know, let alone mainstream society.
Well, you know, it is hard to get out there, but I mean, I think once again, I think especially for African American families, it starts right at home by researching your own family background. If, for example, if you had a father, grandfather, great grandfather that served in the military, And if you've ever wondered, all of us as kids kind of wonder at some point about our parents or grandparents and what their life was like growing up. And that's how I started my history as kind of a teenager, is I wondered about my grandfather and his military service and what he did, because he didn't like to talk about it. So I started there, and then I thought, okay, as I got older, and especially after I graduated with my degree in history, I thought, what about other people? You know, there's other stories out there like my grandfather's that there's some interesting stories out there. So that's kind of where, so it starts at home. If we educate ourselves about our family members that may have served. And then it's just, there's so many books out there right now, and more are coming out every year about African-American service. But the window, especially for World War II, I was lucky when I wrote my Black Submariners book in 2005. I really hit it at the right time. A lot of the, you know, World War II veterans are dying off, of course, at a great, very high rate. So we're losing these stories every day. So I urge any family members out there that, you know, have members that may have served during the war to get those stories. And now we got to start looking at the later wars, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, and, of course, the wars that we're in that may be a little too recent for family members to want to start documenting just yet. But that's where it really starts. You start with your family, and then you're going to be surprised at what you find out. And, you know, who knows what interest is going to be sparked in a future historian that's out there like myself many years ago.
Yeah, how about giving us a list of the books that you've written?
Well, apropos to our topic, I mean, I've written a number of transportation-related books that kind of don't apply to this topic, but I've written, in addition to Black Submariners in the United States Navy, I've written a book which I'm especially proud of called African American World War II Casualties and Decorations, which documents every African American that served in the Navy, Coast Guard, and Merchant Marine during World War II that was either decorated or was a casualty, either wounded or killed in action, which is an quite comprehensive work. I've also wrote a book called Strong and Brave Fellows that documents New Hampshire's, my state where I live now, their African American servicemen that served during the American Revolution. So those are just a few of the 14 I've written that especially are apropos to this topic. So go ahead.
Yeah, and now in doing your research for this book, did you just look up facts, or did you actually talk to these people?
I talked to these people. For the Black Submariners book, it's a very small group of men, about 1,000 as I document my book, that served in the submarine force. And so I did two things. One is I went to National Archives and looked up the records for every single submarine to try and identify these African Americans that served aboard them. And then I really started really trying to contact some of these men through veterans groups and things like that. And really what I found is a very tight-knit community. And once I hit upon the right guys, then they could put me in touch with other guys who could put me in touch with yet other guys. So I attended several reunions, the World War II submarine veterans group would have yearly reunions, so I met at some of these, met some individuals there. I met many individuals in person. Some of them live in New England. And then I've also had numerous telephone interviews. So documenting their service both through their words and also through the historic records themselves generated through the military.
Now, what would make a black man volunteer to serve on a ship that would be 99.9% white?
Well, I think for most African Americans, it was kind of the eliteness of it, and I think that the chance for perhaps a greater camaraderie. Maybe to get started on this, we should go back a little bit. Okay. African Americans that served in the Navy really after the Civil War, and certainly by 1900, were segregated in that they could only serve in one rating, and that was what they called the mess attendant, and later they called it the steward. Okay, every man in the Navy has a job, which is called their rating. They could be a gunner's mate, they could be a engineer, what have you. But African Americans after 1900 were largely restricted to serving as the stewards or the mess attendants. And the job of a mess attendant was to serve the officer corps aboard any particular ship, not even the enlisted men. Their job was just to provide food and care for the officers, clean their quarters, things like that. So on the larger surface ship, so if we think about a battleship or an aircraft carrier that has hundreds or thousands of men and many, many officers, it was very demeaning work for them, and there wasn't much payback. In other words, there wasn't much camaraderie. On the larger ships where you might have as many as 25 or 30 stewards, they were all together, and when they were off duty, they tended to stick with themselves, as would be natural. And there wasn't much intermixing with the other guys. So the team effect on any naval ship was not there in the World War II years. Now, on a submarine, it's different. Everybody is serving in very close quarters. You're talking about an average crew of about 80 men, but you get to know pretty much every man aboard that ship. And what's most important is you have to learn the different aspects of the sub's operation. And that's a process they called qualifying. So even black men went through this process where they had to learn. If they were stuck in one particular compartment when, say, the submarine came under attack, they had to know what to do, how to react. And so the color line was broken in the submarine force really much earlier than it was in any other in the surface ship Navy, if you will. So there was that, I think, attraction. The submarine force was largely volunteer force. It was meant to be entirely volunteer, but there were some men, some African Americans that were kind of commandeered and sent aboard a submarine kind of without necessarily volunteering. So that wasn't 100% true, but I think it's that camaraderie and the chance, really to be part of a team with race, although always in the background, playing a lesser part.
Now, you said in 1900 they did the steward rating. What changed in 1900? Because I've done some studying, and African Americans were pretty much part of ships' crews between 1812 and 1900.
They were part of ships' crews, but you have to remember, after the Civil War era, when all the Jim Crow laws that were coming into place with the era of Reconstruction and things like that, and most of this top-tier hierarchy of the Navy were Southerners, okay? So they don't want black men in the Navy, period. So they start to kind of gradually whittle down the jobs to which they will assign them to. And there's no official Navy documents on this, by the way. This was not a practice that was put out in any bulletins or orders. It was generally done by consensus. And by 1900, there still are gunner's mates and things like that in the Navy, but they are less and less compared to what they were during the Civil War era and even before. By 1908, with the kind of aptly named or ironically named Great White Fleet that Theodore Roosevelt is going to send around the world, especially to Asia, to get America a show of American force, if you will, in that area, many of the stewards in the Navy were Asians, Chinese, Japanese, and these individuals were looked upon with some suspicion. Perhaps they were spies for Asian powers. So most of these stewards, especially on the Great White Fleet, were replaced with African Americans. And this was really the beginning of the end for African American opportunity in the Navy, if you will, for many years. So from 1908 onward, after World War I, by 1919, the U.S. Navy stopped enlisting African Americans altogether, and they didn't restart doing that until 1933. And when they did that in 1933, they said only as a mess attendant were African Americans going to be trained and assigned to jobs. So that, beginning in the 30s, was official policy.
And we had this conversation, I guess, several weeks ago.
Right.
And I was saying, you know, African Americans really weren't treated equally in the military. And Stick was saying, well, no, when men live on a ship, they're one.
No, I said submarine.
Or submarine. And I'm like,
yes.
Yeah, but I don't see them at that time. There was no way to make that happen like that. Am I getting that off? Because from my talking to my uncles and their military experience, they did what they did, but the welcomeness that you would think that they would have when they went to battle really was not there as you would think they would be.
Well, I don't know what branch of was your uncle in the Navy or?
No, he was. I believe they were in the Army.
Yeah, Army definitely. The Army was really kind of the most hidebound, you know, tradition bound service, and they, you know, they were not made to feel welcome. And this was true in the Navy too. You remember in the surface ships, you know, they were, you know, they were treated much the same way. And it's just like in society today. There were some individual white sailors that many of them got along with, and there were many from the North and the South that they didn't get along with. So in the submarine force, though, and I make the case in my book, and most of the gentlemen, not all, but most of the gentlemen that I interviewed for the book agreed that the team-building aspect, the camaraderie, the kind of the mission, for the most part, overrode these other prejudices. And this was really most demonstrated not only aboard the boat, but after they got off the boat and when they went on leave. Sailors tend to go on leave in ports together in small groups. And, of course, submariners were already a fairly small contingent. And many is the time that these guys went into a bar, particularly in one of the most segregated towns in the United States, Honolulu, Hawaii, a major naval base. And African Americans were not welcome in many of these bars. And the shipmates either said, hey, you're going to serve him, or we're all going to leave, or we're going to create problems. And so we see instances of that camaraderie. This also happened stateside, too, in places in the South, even in New England, where many of the submarines were commissioned in New London, Connecticut. It was a habit of the guys to get together, you know, hit the bars before their ships departed for the war zone in the Pacific. And there were instances where African Americans were denied entrance for service, and all the servicemen would gather around and said, hey, he's part of our crew, he's coming in, or we're going to tear this place apart. And all of a sudden the proprietors changed his mind. So that's the great thing about the submarine force. Race never went away. There were some boats that never had a black man serve aboard them because the captain didn't want black men. But there were other boats where they were welcomed with open arms. They were treated as best they could. Now, the commanders could not change the jobs that they had to do. The Navy assigned them to the rating of mess attendant, and so that underlying segregation would not go away until after the end of World War II. But within the context of their service, many of these men were indeed vital parts of their crews and were treated respectfully and appreciated for their abilities. And I'd like to, at some point, talk about a few of these guys when we get around
to it. Yes. Go ahead. I'd like to hear about I was going to ask you. Tell me some of the most fascinating stories that you heard.
Well, some of the most fascinating stories, for example, a guy named Joseph Cross from Louisiana, a short little wiry guy, but just was a popular crewman, so he did his steward's duties. But what his captain soon found out is this guy had a knack for doing lookout duty. So many times the submarines operated on the surface in enemy waters, and you had to have someone out there that you trusted that could see and spot an enemy vessel. Sometimes it's only the wake of the vessel or the slim outline. And Joseph Cross really developed, for whatever reason, he was able to become the best night watchman that boat had. So that boat literally depended on Joseph Cross for their lives, and his crewmen came to trust him. His captain would later say he was the best watchman I had in my boat, and I always put him out there because I knew I could trust him. And that's a key word, is trust. Another guy, George Washington Lytle. And if you go to the Groton, Connecticut, where the Submarine Force Museum and Library is, The first picture of an African American ever exhibited there was George Washington Lytell, who won the Bronze Star for his service aboard the submarine Drum. And once again, he made somewhat on a neighborhood of 10 war patrols on that boat. And he was a huge man, by the way. He should probably have never been in submarines. The guy was well over 6 feet tall, just a huge bear of a man. But he had the respect of his crew, and he was one of the most calm individuals, especially under pressure. And so they had one operation where they had to adjust some of the ballast tanks. And so literally someone had to crawl into these tanks while the submarine was surfaced, once again in enemy waters, to clean out and make these repairs. And at any time, if a Japanese aircraft appeared, the submarine would have to dive, and it would leave that man in the tank to be drowned. He would lose his life. Well, Lytell volunteered for that job and was trusted with that. He was also a member of the ship's deck crew as one of the loaders of the deck guns, and also received a decoration for his actions there. Submarines mostly fought underwater, you know, torpedoing enemy ships at a great rate, but they also saw surface actions where men on these little tin cans floating in the middle of the ocean had to fire these big, three-inch guns at enemy ships while on the surface. So those are a couple guys that stand out in my mind. Yet another one is Arthur Brown from Valdosta, Georgia. He served on the on one of the bigger submarines. It had about a 105-man crew. The Narwhal was his name. It was an older submarine. But he made 15 war patrols, and that was implicitly trusted by his captain. And while we don't have any tales of valor or heroism, one of the things that this large submarine was employed on was evacuating refugees from the Philippine Islands after the Philippines fell to the Japanese. And then various secret raids were made into the Philippines to carry off some of these American missionaries and other persons stranded in the Philippines. Well, the Narwhal was employed in this and crammed about 100 of these refugees into their ship. It was Arthur Brown's job to help care for these and get everybody situated. And he is still remembered today by some of these individuals who keep in contact with him just for the kindness that he showed to them. Also, you know, making their journey out of enemy waters much, much more easily palatable, if that was the case. Arthur Brown told me, he said, you know, I never went to college, but serving aboard that submarine was better than any education I could have gotten at Harvard or Dartmouth. You know, and he still speaks to this day. He's still living in Georgia, still speaks about his white crewmen, fellow crewmen, and his captain as some of the finest human beings that ever lived. They treated him well, and he in turn was revered as a member of the crew. So those are a few of the best stories out there. And there's many more in the book, of course.
And this book can be found on Amazon, I know. Anywhere else? And do you have a website?
You can go to the publisher's website, www.mcfarland.com, and you can order that, and you can see some of my other books there. But
okay.
So if you're looking for it, I urge anyone that has an interest in naval history, African-American history, military history, is a book I'm very proud of because it tells a good military story. The submarine force is often underappreciated because they fought under the seas and were kind of unseen, and their exploits did not make the newspapers because it was by necessity a secret, or as they call it, the silent service. A lot of these stories are unknown. I saw just before I wrote this book, you know, there's a lot of information on the internet, some of it good, much of it bad. I think it was one of these, you know, ask.com, I believe, and someone asked, you know, did African Americans serve in the submarine force? And the answer by their so-called expert was no. You know, they were segregated. And, of course, my book proves that that was really not the case. Many of these guys served. Many of them did not come back from their service. Many of them died, went down with their ship. 52 American submarines were lost during the war. And, you know, many stewards lost their life in the course of their service. So,
now, there were several stories in the book about singularly racist crewmen and what their captains did with those. Can you elaborate on some of those stories.
Well, the captain, of course, being the you know, the sole arbitrator aboard any Navy ship, and of course in the submarine force, it's kind of interesting because you tended to have the younger captains at first during World War II, when the submarine force is just kind of getting its feel and about what its role was going to be. A lot of older men commanded the submarines. Well, they were rather timid, and they were kind of old school Navy, which included the segregationist policies. But as time went on, the first years of the war, a lot of the younger commanders were sent in. So these were men that were more open to having good crewmen no matter what their race. And so, you know, they were not willing to tolerate instances of you know, segregation or poor treatment of one crew member by another. And probably the most of this stuff was really policed not by the captain or the commanding officers, but more by fellow crewmen. We actually see more of that, and especially in the mess quarters, you know, where the men would gather to eat their meals. Now, typically in most ships, African-Americans were kind of ate separately, but in the submarine force, if you've ever been in a submarine such as the USS Cod, that's a museum ship up in Cleveland, there's not much room in the submarine, so most of the men ate together at some point. And so, you know, when racist comments were made, more often than not, a fellow crewman would speak up about these things. And I think I'm trying to remember the name of one of the boats where this happened. Someone was commenting in the mess hall and in the mess quarters about one particular steward, and his crewman basically shunned him, and he was soon shuffled off the boat to serve in another boat. So, you know, these incidents were out there. Most white crewmen learned a lot. A lot of the whites that I interviewed for this book said, you know, I had some misconceptions. Either I had never really known a black person, or what I thought I knew I had learned secondhand from other people. But once I served alongside of them, I really found out that they were you know, individuals just like me, trying to serve their country and do their duty. And so, again, in many cases. Now, there were some cases where, you know, crews were not tolerant. And there were cases, I interviewed one fellow who was very unhappy with the submarine service and begged to get off the ship, and he did, even though he was awarded a medal for his actions while he was aboard the boat. He felt he was treated like a dog. So I don't want to paint the picture that everything was perfect in the submarine force. Just like the rest of American society, we see the good, the bad, and the ugly. So, you know, but by and large, these incidents on American submarines during World War II, the good outweighed the bad quite heavily. And if we remember our history, surface ships always continued to be a problem, even into the 1970s, when we had some very unhappy African-American sailors on the United States carrier Kitty Hawk who were unhappy at their treatment. So as late as the 1970s, a lot of things had yet to change on the surface ships. Below the water, so to speak, on the submarine, things had gotten quite different.
Hey, Glenn, can I get you for another 20 minutes, another 15 minutes at least? I need to take a top-of-the-hour break. I need to take a top-of-the-hour break. I've got some calls that are coming in, and I've got some questions to ask you that are coming in from Facebook. So if you could hold on, let me take my break. I'd greatly appreciate it. You're
not a problem.
Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. We'll be right back.
ABC's Matt McGarry is in Gaza.
It has certainly intensified in the last 24 hours as Israeli rockets have been fired into Gaza. They've been going after Hamas targets, trying to take out Hamas's ability to fire their rockets. And in return, Hamas has continued to hammer their missiles into Israel.
More than two dozen Palestinians said to have been killed this week. More allegations about NSA spying on citizens. A new report based on documents leaked by Edward Snowden says the government collected emails from prominent Muslim Americans. The U.S. ambassador to Germany has been summoned to the Foreign Office in Berlin. Another German intelligence official reported to have spied for the U.S.
Just a week after the arrest of a German intelligence employee cast a new shadow over relations between the two countries, German authorities are busy investigating again. Without being specific, this second man is said to work in the military field.
Tom Rivers at the ABC News Foreign Desk. Do you put sun spray on your kids? New finding says maybe you should think again.
If you've ever tried to take a deep breath and apply hairspray at the same time, you'll understand. The concern with spray on sunscreen is kids might breathe it in, which could be dangerous even though there's no medical evidence to support that yet. Consumer Reports recommends keeping it away from kids. ABC News Chief Health and Medical Editor Dr. Richard Besser offers these tips.
You want to make sure that you're not using it on a windy day because you can't control where it's going. You never want to spray it near their face, so put it on your hands and then rub it on their face.
And he says reapply it often.
Scott Goldberg, this is ABC News.
Attention taxpayers, if you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS, it's a fact that they have the power to take everything you own, including your home, business, and even your freedom. If you've received a letter from the IRS, don't ignore it. Your problem will only continue to get worse. Here's the good news. The IRS has recently released new programs geared at helping struggling taxpayers where you may now qualify to settle your tax debt and wipe out up to 85% or more of what you currently owe, including penalties and interest, or you may qualify for other special programs. If you're being audited, have years of unfiled tax returns, have a federal tax lien, or worse yet, are being issued a wage garnishment or bank levy, listen carefully. Authority Tax Services expert staff of ex-IRS agents, attorneys, and CPAs can immediately protect you from IRS and state collectors and get you the best possible tax settlement guaranteed. Call 800-239-3837. That's 800-239-3837. 800-239-3837.
President Obama flying to Texas today. He plans to hold a meeting in Dallas with Texas Governor Rick Perry about the immigration crisis along the U.S.-Mexico border. Despite hiring more by employers, fewer teens are getting summer jobs this year after getting off to a strong start in May. Employment gains for 16 to 19-year-olds fell back in June, and compared with 2013, what's going on?
It was down 15% from a year ago. Surprising.
That's John Challenger, CEO of the jobs firm Challenger Gray & Christmas, which surveyed employers. It says the declining number for teenage jobs is part of a longer-term trend.
Teen participation in the labor force has been falling since the late 1970s.
Instead of working, many kids go to summer school or camp.
More teens are choosing not to go out and find that job at the local retail store or gas station.
This is ABC News.
Here are some things you don't have to do to get the right car insurance at the right price from Safe Auto. You don't have to bundle. You don't have to keep switching. Safe Auto keeps it simple so you can get on with your life. Call 1-800-SAFE-AUTO.
Broadcasting from the Ford Studios, great summer deals are happening now on the full line of Ford vehicles during the Summer Spectacular Sales Event. Visit your Northeast Ohio Ford dealer or drive1ohio.com.
Welcome to Tracy and Friends, weekdays from 9 to noon. The show that stimulates your mind on the issues of the day. Call the show at 347-945-5229 or toll free at 1-800-530-WSOM. That's 347-945-5229 or 1-800-530-WSOM. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
Well, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. It is 5 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and it is 5 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock today on the 9th of July, 2014.
Yep.
We've got a gentleman by the name of Glenn
Knobloch,
and he's from Hawaii, and he's a historian. And
he's from New Hampshire.
No, he's from Ohio.
Oh, I thought you said Hawaii.
No, he's from Ohio. He's from Ohio,
right.
And I'm trying to figure out how do I get him back.
Back into Ohio.
Yeah. Don't you want to move back? We've got great places here. We're in Youngstown, Ohio. We'd love to have you come back home.
Well,
don't laugh.
I'm pretty ensconced here in New Hampshire now, but I have all my family back in Ohio there. I've got some in the Northeast and some in the Northwest, so.
You should come home.
You grew up just slightly northwest of us, right? Isn't that what you told me on the phone?
I grew up in mostly northwest Ohio, Bowling Green area. Local boy, went to the college there. My sisters live in the, you know, over in, or one of my sisters lives over in Chardon and kind of the northeast part of Ohio there, so, as does
well,
my
know,
mother. So.
You know, this is a setup. They actually prompted us to call you so that we could, like, tell you that you need to move back home.
Did you call them and tell them you're going to be our guest to help our ratings?
Yeah.
Please. I've got some calls on. I have one gentleman that he wants to know. He wrote in from Facebook, and he wants to know. He said, "Can you tell us a little about the period between 1865 and 1900?"
As far as the Navy goes, okay. So, as far as the American Navy goes, there were a great many many African Americans served in the Navy during the Civil War. Now, of course, after the Civil War, you know, the Navy, after any war, had to downsize a little bit, okay? So, you know, there were lesser, you know, the American Navy was disposing of ships. They didn't need as many. So, consequently, their numbers all across the board, including African Americans, decreased. But what is particularly devastating for African Americans in the Navy in those post-Civil War years was, again, the Reconstruction era and the rise of Jim Crow. Okay, now we know that happened in the South. Okay, all these restrictive voting laws. So even though African Americans were now free, supposedly had the full rights of citizenship, we know that didn't happen. You know, there were many of these voting rights laws put into place to try and stop them, and you know, by many of the Southern governments and things like that. So there are lots of problems. Well, the American Navy, even though it's a government entity, government institution, you know, they suffered these same problems. Like I said, while much of the hierarchy of the American Navy were Southerners. Remember, most of the American major naval ports on the East Coast were in the South, Norfolk, Virginia, places in Florida, and places like that. So Southerners had no interest in giving African Americans an increased presence or equality in the American military. So these rights were gradually whittled away, okay? So as men retired, say you have a gunner's mate that was in the service, as he retired, he would be replaced by a white person, okay? And again, there was no formal mandate, there was no formal naval bulletin or communique that came down that said, all right, we're going to restrict African Americans to duty of serving officers. This was, again, this is just something that gradually evolved and became a tradition and one that was accepted by the Navy and even welcomed by the Navy hierarchy. And again, it culminated in that 1908, you know, with the Great White Fleet, and really provided an excellent excuse to clean out the Asian stewards that popularly served and replace them with African Americans, even African Americans that had never done duty as stewards. In other cases, African Americans were pulled off ship duty altogether, much to their dismay, and were put on shore duty. And, of course, it's hard to be a gunner's mate on shore, so you're put into this position of being forced into serving a white officer. So a lot of this stuff, again, is we see the numbers and the jobs that African Americans were doing in the Navy between the end of the Civil War and that 1908 time period. Their rights were gradually being whittled away. So that's kind of how that evolved.
South Carolina, your mic is on.
Well, thank you, Tracy. I just want to say hello to your guests and everything. I just have a question. Maybe the guest can answer this. You know, I spent 6 years in the Marine Corps and been involved with the Marine Corps League. But I'm just wondering, how much does the modern media have to do with the shaping of how race relations in the military is being today?
your question is about race relations in the military today?
Oh, no, no, no. How the perception of what racial relationships were in the military versus what the media portrays them to be. I mean, when I was in the Marine Corps, you know, the only thing anybody cared about is if I could shoot as well as the guy in the foxhole next to me.
What years were you in the military, sir?
I was in there from 82 to 1988.
Okay, 82 to 88. And I thank you for your service to our country. Well, you got to remember, we're talking about an earlier time period here. I am a historian. I really deal with the era primarily from Vietnam and prior. So when we're talking about World War II, the media really had no impact on that. Now, because the effort was all about winning the war, okay? So as far as media efforts to talk about this, you know, racism wasn't talked about in the media kind of like we do today, especially during wartime. We've got to remember, especially World War II, when the overriding concern was defeating Tojo in Japan and defeating Hitler in Europe. And and even Roosevelt, who had the power to desegregate the Navy, and by the way, he loved the Navy. He was an ardent advocate for the Navy. And even some black servicemen I talked to said, you know what, the overriding concern was winning the war. We'll deal with racism later on after the war ends. But I really don't credit any media impact or somehow making the problem seem worse than it was. The problem was bad during the World War II era, and really it didn't begin to change until Vietnam. If you had been a black serviceman serving in World War II in the Army especially, you would have been a very unhappy fellow because you were not treated well by the Army, and I've written extensively about this too for Harvard and Oxford University Press, but they were not recognized for valor at the same rates as whites were. They were not offered the same promotions. So, I mean, we're straying a little off topic here. In the Navy, right, it was the same way. And one of the best ways that I can illustrate this for you is all of the services except the Navy have kind of reevaluated their medals award practices from the World War II years. In other words, they went back and looked at men that were recommended for, say, the Medal of Honor, and then were rejected for reasons unknown but likely due to race. And as a result of some of these examinations in the 1990s in particular, the Army admitted that, yes, we were prejudiced when it came to giving African Americans the country's highest decoration for military valor. The Navy, on the other hand, never has agreed to conduct such a review, and although there are many candidates for men that probably should have received the Medal of Honor, the Navy has refused to do that. So whatever media pressure has been brought to bear certainly hasn't done anything in that case. But I would make the case, especially for this earlier era, there's no case where it was maybe made to seem worse than it really was. It was very bad.
There's another question, and someone said, well, the biggest travesty has been that they've hidden the history of the military and blacks in the military, and blacks in the, and like you said, black submariners.
Yeah.
Some of this history is just erased and or eroded, and you can't find it. They suppressed it.
Yeah, I think the military has tried to change that. If you go on the U.S. Navy's official historic website, they now have and have had for probably a decade. You know, they have tabs relating to African American history where you can look up. But certainly from the World War II era, and I think the history is hidden because, let's face it, unless you're into military history, you're probably not reading it. I would guess that most readers have never heard of my books. They're not New York Times bestsellers because, you know, we're not talking about a Sergeant York or, some of these famed figures of America's wars, these, single action guys, especially in Navy terms, this is hidden history because, remember, a Navy operates as a ship no more than we have heard, by the way, of most white sailors that maybe may have served aboard a ship at Pearl Harbor or what have you. All we get to see are the later day veteran celebrations. Pearl Harbor Day celebrations, by the way, are an excellent example of that. Now, we never see African Americans even referenced at Pearl Harbor, even though many African Americans lost their life at Pearl Harbor. We typically see these, you know, white veterans gathered together to serve this, and that's unfortunate. And I agree, the travesty is the hidden history, but works like mine, and there are many other works out there, if you whether you use Google online or whatever, there are many and more stories that are coming out, and they are out there. You have to search for them, admittedly so, but they are coming out. And I think the especially I know the American Navy does want to get their stories out there and has really tried to celebrate their diversity in modern times and has taken a look at the past as well and tried to highlight those, especially from the Civil War era onward and the men that served. So that history is slowly getting out there. It's always it's always a struggle because it's not always a glamorous history, so to speak, but it is one that is necessary, and I think we all benefit from reading those.
Yeah, it's not common knowledge, but the submarine force is what kept the Japanese at bay while we rebuilt our force after Pearl Harbor.
Well, not
Absolutely.
Only that, but I mean the American submarine force, were vital in disrupting Japanese supply lines and really destroyed Japanese merchant shipping and their abilities to get their troops from one location to another. So, once again, you've heard that old term, loose lips sink ships. You know, these exploits did not generally make the papers because for them to make the papers, Japanese spies were monitoring American papers. And so literally to highlight the actions of one particular submarine in one area or theater of the war could mean the loss of that submarine. So they truly were the silent service. So in the case of submarine force especially, their exploits, and again, it's a team exploit. There's very few single-man actions at war on a submarine. It's one group of men fighting as one unit to destroy enemy shipping, to take out the, you know, enemy shore installations, things like that.
Well, Glenn, I want to thank you for your time. I know I held you over, but I appreciate it. You are the author of Black Submariners, and your name is Glenn Knobloch. You can find, if you Google his name, you can find him. And you said you can buy the book at which publisher?
McFarland, McFarland, McFarland.com.
And I want to thank you. I would love to have you back again to talk about other things in history, especially as we go into our Veterans Day and our Memorial Days and our V-Days, because it's very, very important, and it's very, very difficult to find.
It is. Well, contact me anytime. I really appreciate talking with you, Tracy, and sharing this information with a wider audience. My pleasure.
Thank you so much. Listen, we're going to take a break. I'll be right back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5529. We'll see you when we come back from our break.
Let's talk for a moment about a great doctor. Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoning Valley. If you're looking for a doctor to help you with your prenatal needs or help with your decisions or questions about birth control, call 330-746-7007 and talk to Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoning Valley. And read the testimonials at AIWHealth.com.
I could not have had a better experience. Dr. Hill was always attentive to my needs and empathetic when the situation called for that type of sentiment. Dr. Hill's office environment and staff are pleasant and warm. Clearly, a good deal of care has gone into making the visiting experience a good one.
All patients receiving prenatal care get a free designer diaper bag. Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoning Valley only has one goal, ensuring your health so you could fully enjoy all of the times of your life. 1350 Fifth Avenue in Youngstown. Call 330-746-7007 and visit AIWHealth.com.
Boardman Frame House Gallery, a professional frame shop and art gallery at the Mark Shopping Center in Poland,
at Routes 224 and 680. We specialize in original, limited, and antique lithographs of both renowned nationally published artists and local artists. We have over 30 years of award-winning custom design and archival framing. We give your artwork a unique presentation that enhances its value for life. Let your home or office express something individual and unique with a fine art limited edition print signed by the artist and numbered. You'll find many unique and affordable fine art editions. Visit us in the Mark Shopping Center. Find the Greenwich Workshop Catalog. And for any print or canvas you order, you get 50% off the frame for that fine art edition. Find us on Facebook or call us at 330-758-5795. That's 330-758-5795.
Howdy, howdy. I'm so excited. Charlie Staples Barbecue Sauce is at the grocery store. That's right. You can get Charlie Staples Barbecue Sauce right at the store. That means you can put back the thick and muddy. If you can't taste the meat, what's the point? Pick up the smooth and delicate Charlie Staples Barbecue Sauce. Next time you find yourself down at the market, remember, Charlie Staples Barbecue Sauce, the full cup of love.
Charlie Staples Barbecue Sauce is now available at the grocery stores. Ask your grocer for a cup of love.
If you can't taste the meat, then what's the point?
Fit Family. Unique, individualized, and promoting a healthy, active lifestyle. Fit Family on Route 46 in Austintown designs a personal exercise program just for you with your own personal trainer. Each client at Fit Family in Austintown receives their own certified personal trainer with their membership. And at Fit Family, we listen to you and design a fitness program to the type of fitness you're looking for with all the equipment you need for strength training, cardio, Pilates, and more. We also offer classes in Zumba, yoga, kickboxing, step, 5K training, line dancing, silver sneaker, and real rider cycling. Fit Family is open Monday through Saturday with hours that fit your schedule. Find out more about Fit Family in Austintown. Call 330-793-4466. That's 330-793-4466. Visit us on the web at fitfamily1.com. That's fitfamily1.com.
I'm Willie Flores with your headline news. A Jamestown area man is dead after a crash Friday in Green Township. State police say Clifton L. Erb III, 45, veered off Kinsman Road at about 11 p.m. Police say he was not wearing a seatbelt. Erb was thrown from the vehicle that rolled at least once and struck a driveway culvert. He was pronounced dead at the emergency room at UPMC Horizon. Police say a Sharpsville man killed his friend on Friday night as he fought off his attempts to drive him home from a bar. Fred Earl Abbott, 36, started drinking early when he drove himself to the Sharpsville American Legion on West Main Street. There he met his friend. He was joking with him outside, and he ended up kicking him in the stomach, which actually caused him to fall and then die. Hospital personnel said Frederick recently had heart surgery and may have had complications. For WSOM News, I'm Julio Flores.
We're back with Tracy and friends on News Talk 600 WSOM, 347-945-5229 or toll free at 1-800-530-WSOM, online at tracyandfriends.com or 600WSOM.com.
All I'm saying is, feeling sure can lie. And if you're lying, keep on lying. Don't tell the truth. Don't you dare. You can't drop it. Baby, you still got me.
Okay, we're back. And you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600 here on the 9th of July, 2014 at 10:25. And I hope you're having a good day. The sun is shining. I had to cut Happy off because the sun is shining. It's so wonderful, as you know.
Just wait a few hours. We're supposed to have thunderstorms again this afternoon.
Hey, a tornado touched down in Canfield.
Yeah, I know. I saw that.
There was no warning, no noise, no nothing. It was like, poof, here we are.
We're turning into a rainforest. I talked to a farmer friend of mine a couple weekends ago. He said it's been averaging an inch a day. We average an inch of rain a day since May.
Wow. Hey, South Carolina, your mic is on. Eric, your mic is on. And who else is out there? Tionki, your mic is on. And,
hey, Tracy.
Yes, sir.
I've been looking at the news lately. And it's interesting, Six was talking about rain. What's the deal with the news media making such a big deal out of these storms? I mean, we've been having these storms every year, ever since I can remember. But why are they making such a big deal out of this thunderstorm? They come in the summertime.
Can you say slow news and or global warming?
It's been happening since I was a kid.
South Carolina. Can you say global
warming?
Climate
change. I find it very interesting that the guy that's going to give the Democrats $100 million to elect candidates that are for global warming made all his money in coal.
Well, he already made his money. What's the
No, he's making more money.
That's something different.
No. He made money here on coal, and now he's making money in Asia on coal, and he's got contracts out for the next 20 years.
Okay, and your point is?
Well, if you really believe something like that, don't you cut your investments and walk away?
This is not about a belief system. What did I tell you earlier? It's all about money.
Same reason Al Gore built his house on the beach.
Listen, global warming, climate change,
it's like a drug dealer saying, it's like a drug dealer lecturing kids on saying other drugs.
Correct. Talk about the money. You missed the, I mean, you, what? Think about this. It's like a man, I got to go with what Eric said. It's like a drug dealer dealing drugs to kids and then telling his own kids, don't do drugs.
There's a lot of them do that.
It's about the money. People don't, I mean.
But the thing is, can't the rest of us see the hypocrisy?
No. Because we're not taught to see. We're taught to obey.
There is none so blind that he will not see.
You're singing now too, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's what I'm saying.
I sang that song when I was in church.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what it's about. We're talking about history and black submariners and blacks in the military. This stuff has not been written in books. They're not teaching this in class. And let me say this. And when we say black history is not about black people learning
their own history. It's American history.
It's American history of learning about all people who have contributed to their history and to the society.
Well, I was going through the book, and I didn't realize I enlisted in 82, and I didn't realize that the steward rating wasn't done away with until 75. And they were still slotting black people into that rating without choice. Not all, but many, up until 75.
I'm just saying.
And I had no idea about that. I didn't realize that.
And that's what I'm saying. I mean, look at what's going on around us. I mean, we have Black History Month instead of having American history all year long. Does that make sense to anybody? People that live in Nova Scotia need to know who contributed what. They need to know more than Martin Luther King and George Washington Carver. Hey, the number is 347-945-5229. Hey, good morning, Pionki. Your mic is on.
I said hello, hello, hello.
Your mic, I didn't hear your button push. How you doing, darling?
Well, I don't think you would hear my, you mean the one? Oh, okay, I understand.
Yeah. You understand now, I didn't hear the button push. You're welcome. How you doing,
darling? You didn't hear. I didn't know it made a noise when I pushed it.
Absolutely.
Oh, I guess it does make a beep when I push one. But, you know, black history, or black African-American history, black history, so-called, quote-unquote, that history just doesn't start in America. And it depends on who tells it, too.
We know that, too, because everything in a book is not right. But I'm just saying, overall, just give me the information as chronological as it has happened in history. And quit dancing over what you want me to know and what you don't want me to know and hiding that which you don't want me to know. And that's what's wrong. I mean, people should not have to hunt for American history to find people that look like them when they contributed to the bottom line just of America before you even get to America. You have yet. I have, no one has yet to put tell me where in the world they can tell me the Indians came from. You ever notice that?
Where the Indians come from?
Where did the Indians? See, you have to understand. American Christopher Columbus discovered the Americas. Right?
No.
Who?
Depends. Chinese. I saw a thing on history the other day said Chinese were here.
Okay, let me ask you this. On your test, on your ACT proficiency test, if you put down anything else outside of Christopher Columbus, will you get it right?
Today, I don't know. When I graduated, that was the correct answer. But
the question
we're
is...
We're finding more...
The question is...
Okay.
This is not Common Core. The question is, right now, the official answer is what?
See, that's what I'm saying. In
2014,
I don't know what the official answer is.
The official answer is
because we found more anthropological and archaeological evidence that there were many people here
before Christopher Columbus. Well, guess what? The answer still stands correct because we still have Christopher Columbus Day, and they have not turned it into Founders Day. You notice that?
Never noticed that. Never noticed that.
Christopher Columbus Day is still the Columbus Day. It hasn't changed yet. It's still official. And I'm just saying, 831, your mic is on.
Hello, Tracy. Hi,
hey,
everyone.
Bonnie.
I think you're spot on, Tracy. I'm calling to agree with you, which I've done
Uh-oh.
Before. Yeah. Usually causes some kind of conflict. But I'm saying that the American children, no matter what color their skin is, they are not learning American history. They do not know their history.
Some people, girls, or military people, keep calling the buildings and they're not.
Who is that?
They're not answering the phone enough, and they keep calling the buildings.
Okay, go ahead, Bonnie.
Well,
sorry,
it depends on what school they go to.
Well, I have the book Conform, and that is basically what it is, but I've known it for a long time. I called in one time, and we were talking about this. This has been a long time ago, Tracy, and I said when I was a child in grade school, the map that was pulled down from the chalkboard was North America was the largest continent. And
say that again, Bonnie. North America was the largest continent.
It was the largest continent on that map. It showed South Africa. You know, it showed many other countries, but it North America. Now, I was in grade school in 1960, and then you know, so I'm guessing I would have been you know maybe second, third grader. You know, by 65. Okay, by 1965. I could do the math real quick, but I'm not going to. But
don't do the math.
I remember also, you know, there's been so many things. I mean, my great-grandmother was an American Indian, and I've heard very similar stories that your callers and maybe you and many of the people that are black that call in the station have experienced. I have a handicapped grandson, and he is to this day. I feel discriminated against, not because of the color of his skin, but because of his disability. Now,
a lot
also
of people
had,
feel that way.
I mean, it's true. And then we're going to add another one. We're discriminated against because of the income. But and the reason that that's an issue and why some people who call in do not understand is because when you are suppressed so that you cannot make an adequate living, because of the color of your skin or because of your disability, that then puts you in another category of poverty, which then you're discriminated against again, and you're not given the opportunity as an American. And that is what I don't think everybody that calls into your show gets. I think that they're, you know, we try to divide it between Republicans and Democrats. And there are people on both political sides who use people with disabilities. I think the retirees, I think the veterans, I think they're discriminated against. We really have more than just one thing going on here in America, where there are
lots
of people, and they have not been in the history books. I mean, my grandmother was not allowed to attend school. My great-grandmother, sorry. And, you know, we're talking about women. You know, women were not allowed to go to school in America. People don't think that ever happened. Oh, yeah, it happened. You know, it also happened that they weren't allowed to vote, that they couldn't decide whether or not they were going to have children or not. That was not anything a woman could do. I mean, my grandmothers have talked about this to me.
I mean,
now,
if you go back 40 years, you know, women couldn't have a credit card in their name without a man's signature.
Yeah,
Tracy,
but those weren't laws that said that those things couldn't happen. Those were people practicing things.
But that's exactly what I'm talking about. That's exactly what I'm talking about. I'm talking about people discriminated against still, against the color of their skin, their education, their income level, their disability.
You can't legislate. You can't legislate people's morals.
But there were already laws put into place which should never have happened, limiting the availability for those people with disabilities.
That was the jury segregation.
This is the issue. Everybody wants to have their own area of where they're discriminated against and acknowledged. And so it becomes a competition of my discrimination was worse than yours, or your discrimination was not like mine. So
that drives me crazy, Tracy.
But what I'm saying is, what the levels of the compassion that we should have one for another based upon their experiences should be the same, and they're not.
Yes.
And that's where we cause problems. Let me finish, Pianki, and I'll let you in. I promise. The problem is we don't want to have compassion for other people based upon their experience. And because we don't have compassion for them, because we'll tell people, well, you just need to get over it, not understanding the burden and the passion and the experience that I've had has shaped me into who I am that causes me not to like not even myself but other people that look like me. Go ahead, Pianki.
Well, I think you're talking about, you may be referring to individuals rather than groups. It's one thing for individuals. You see, another thing, some discrimination is not illegal, and some discrimination is good. But when you talk about a ethnic group of people that was discriminated for a particular reason, it's nothing more other than their skin color, then that's different. You know, it goes back to the same thing
that
we know.
Tell me who was not discriminated against as a group.
Who was not discriminated as I said individuals.
Right.
I never have known, say, handicapped people was discriminated as a group. Because
absolutely.
you see some handicapped people in places where, and then you see some that was not in places. You know, they went through a whole, the ADA Act, which makes it possible for you to have curbside access and so on, and ramps into buildings and so on and so
on.
But
in their past, they were discriminated against as a group.
Yeah, but how did you know they was handicapped in all cases?
Well, Tracy, there still is that. No Child Left Behind is a law to actually discriminate against children with disabilities. It limits them to the same quality of education that the typically normal children are exposed to. They can be, without their parents' suggestion, they can be placed in a classroom and never be mainstreamed. If they don't have an advocate, when you think about that, you need an advocate, which we could place that as an attorney We could place that as a political figure with you so that you can get an adequate education. That would not be tolerated against.
But that wasn't a written law. And here's another, and the problem with what you have said is that courts have said there's no definition of a quality education. What is a quality education? There was no written law in any place that I know of said that a handicapped person cannot live amongst a certain group on this block, or they had to live in this certain block, or so on and so on and so on. So it's African-American people of slave descent have a legitimate gripe when they say the things that they say. Their experience was unique in particular.
I believe that. But where you're wrong, Bianchi, is when you were born, you had no choice of the color of your skin. Just as the person who is born with a disability, they have no choice of this disability. And the life that's given or the opportunities that are placed there, regardless to whether or not they are legal or not legal, they are wrong. No one should not be given the opportunity to excel in any way, shape, or form. Now, a lot of people believe, oh, well, we put these laws into place to protect these poor people. Haven't we heard on Tracy and Friends so many times, oh, you people aren't smart enough to educate your own children. You people aren't smart enough to get your own housing. You people aren't smart enough to save for your own education. That's what we're talking about. That's what I thought the show, what we were talking about in this, and what my comment means. I absolutely believe that blacks have been discriminated against. I absolutely believe that. I absolutely believe that it still happens today. And I'd still say it's wrong. But there are still many, many discriminations, which a lot of people don't recognize.
Well, I agree with you. There are many discrimination. I always have said this. Discrimination comes in many shapes and forms and colors. But the thing is that the only thing that a governing body, a land, can address is they have to put certain discrimination as being illegal in violation of a citizen's civil rights.
And I believe in my heart that if you have to have and No Child Left Behind, or Whose Idea Is It, and you have to have an individual education plan so that you can get the same education as your brothers or sisters or your neighbors, that's discrimination. Because what if they just said, this for an example, and this is only an example, what if someone said, okay, everyone with blonde hair and blue eyes will need an individual education plan? Wouldn't that be a case of full discrimination? What if they said, let's only the Asian children or the black children or only white children have an individual education plan? Don't you think that that discriminates against a group of people?
Well,
really
I've seen black activist groups. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay.
One of the things that I'm seeing as far as an IEP is concerned is the use of the parent using that IEP as kind of like a weapon against the system. There have been children that I've seen in the educational system that definitely do not need to be mainstream because the parent will not do the things that they need to do for that child in order for that child to be mainstream. If a child definitely has ADHD or has some type of other disability and they need to be given their medication so they can function in that environment, if the parent doesn't do it, the school is the one that's held responsible, not the parent. And that's where the problem comes in with having those IEPs and how they're abused.
And the other thing is, too, South Carolina, that when there is an individual education plan, you have to put a lot of energy and time as a parent to hold someone accountable for the things that they do to the children. And I believe that that happens in black schools because we've talked about it here on Tracy and Friends. We've talked about this, that children, you know, are kind of stuck in these schools that aren't giving these children the education they deserve. Well, an opportunity to even be educated. I mean, they're being discriminated actually against even like their address, you know, where their address is. Their children are being discriminated against.
Well, the biggest discrimination is what is when they are forced to go to a particular school. The biggest discrimination is when they don't have the option to put their child where they want to and be able to take the money that would otherwise go to the four school, whereas they can take their child where they want to.
Exactly. And a child with an individual education plan, unless the parents have a great deal of money, political power, maybe have some friends, to get through that system is just exasperating. I mean, it is just time-consuming. Now, mind you, a child that's already got a disability takes a great deal of care. So on top of that, you have to become a Philadelphia lawyer, a teacher, a bus driver.
You know, and just based on, you know, how people feel. And I said that, you know, I think it is, and it came up when, and I said, people don't realize everybody has to have their own, whatever their passion is, whatever their experience is. They said, well, this, you know, my experience was worse than your experience as a group. This happened to black people, and this is far more heinous, and this is what happened to blind people, and this is what happened to these people. How many houses are there? No, I said there's one.
Two.
Oh, there's two? And I said, this is what happened to these people, and this is what happened to other people. And they're like, well, no. And this is what happened to other people. And at the top of the break, I'll tell you something else. And everybody wants theirs to be the worst. And what I'm saying to everyone is yours may be the worst in your own perception and in your own mind, but you have to also acknowledge that based upon my experience, it was the worst thing that happened to my people and where I'm from. But the problem is we don't have compassion and or understanding for the other group of people. So when Mike comes on and says that his experience as a blind person of discrimination is just like black people, we get upset because we're saying there's no way that your experience could be as bad as mine because they didn't do to you what they did to me.
Well, when you're being discriminated against, you just assume everybody else's discrimination is just the same as yours.
Correct. And we're saying well, ours is worse than that. They just won't acknowledge it. And the Jews say, well, ours was worse than that. And you just won't acknowledge that. And what I'm saying is we don't listen to the other person's story and have compassion for it.
Right.
Because we feel as though mine is worse than everyone else's. And so until you acknowledge mine is worse than yours, you don't understand what's going on with me.
Well, I don't think that the story that they talk about is really relevant because it didn't happen on American soil. In Philadelphia, it's mandated that children take that subject of what happened to them in Europe. That did not happen on American soil, so why should American children be mandated to take that subject?
Because they understand how to push legislation, school education, and policy through to make sure that their history gets taught. And I noticed something the other day, and I may be off base with this, but I don't think I am. The difference between the Holocaust of the Jewish people and African-American slavery is one had photos.
Right.
And one did not.
Tracy, you're right. That's exactly good. That's a really great description because you're right. You're right.
Because we have movies, and movies are depicted to be drama. So everything in the movie can't be true. But when you have photos of actual crimes over in Germany against the Jewish people, you can see the death camps. You can see the gas chambers.
Well,
African Americans, you don't see what was done.
There are photos of the slave market in Charleston, but they're not widely disseminated.
Listen, there are photos of the slave market, but there are not photos of how the slaves were treated. There are photos of hangings of black people and the Ku Klux Klan, but there are really not photos of what went on. You don't see how the beatings, you don't see the whippings, you don't see the rapes, you don't see the emasculation of
the
male.
Well, of course, you're not going to see the rapes.
You don't see all that. Pardon me?
You can see the results of the rapes,
but you don't. No. You see the great product of the rape. You understand? Because you see me and I have light-colored eyes and I've got olive-colored skin, You see a great product.
No, well, you see products of a black family with one child that's misplaced.
But what I'm saying is, when you see me, you don't see the brutality that went through the generations that were in my past. See, the woman that got raped, you didn't see the slave master hold her down, slap her around, and do whatever he chose, and her not be able to say anything. You don't see that. But when she got pregnant with that child and that child came forth, and that child came forth lighter than she was, you see a beautiful child out of that. But you don't see that woman and what she went through, because the heinous rapes of today that we scream about cannot compare to that which was going on an ongoing basis just because the slave owner wanted it to happen.
Well, you know, to correspond it, you know, if we had to show pictures of Europeans being with their ribs showing and so on, quote-unquote death camps, well, then we should be able to show a picture of our ancestors in the Congo where King Leopold have them posing with their hands missing and limbs missing, where if they didn't meet their quota with the production of rubber, they got their hands cut off. So those pictures exist.
But
yes, they do.
They exist, but again, not in the distribution as they do for the Holocaust. You can go almost anywhere, and you will find depictions and images of what was happening in Germany with the Jews, but you don't see that with
blacks. But that's them doing that for themselves. Blacks have the ability to do that for themselves also,
I'm just saying what the reality is. I'm not saying what we can and cannot do. I'm just saying the reality of what it is. Hey, Larry, good morning.
Good morning. I hear what you're saying, but and I think, the reality is it's not. But the truth is that there are there's pictures, there's written word, all kinds of stuff out there, but you don't see that. You can, like you say, I can go down to Columbus right now and see a memorial to the Holocaust that Kasich just unveiled right outside the State House. But there's nothing out there because we haven't demanded anything for that. You said it earlier, Tracy. I think you said they have the infrastructure and the power structure to be able to make sure that their history is taught. We don't do that. We celebrate it 1 month in February and think that's all going to be good, and we need to tell the truth.
And let me also say this, and let me say this. We in our individual sects work independently of each other, not being able to collectively come together as one cohesive unit to get things done, so that if we want to have a memorial and or a depiction, we don't actually – if it comes, like they had, I think they had a rolling history thing going on with Tavis Smiley's and Nationwide. It came to certain cities, but it didn't come through Youngstown. And if it does come, we may or may not take our children down to see it because we don't support it. Hold on, Pionki. We never have the infrastructure to make sure that things happen. The African American Museum in Detroit, Michigan. And you go in there on any given day, and it can be very, very sparse in its attendance because we're not taking our children there. So instead of them going and going to the mall and spending money, we need to take them where it's air conditioned on a field trip there.
Let me ask you a question,
who's
Tracy.
Getting in that car? Yes. Hold on, Pionki. What'd you say?
If the descendants of slaves was compensated monetarily from any entity, you know, there's been cases where your black farmers was compensated monetarily. If they, do you think that they should be required to pay taxes to the IRS on those compensations? And not only to the IRS at the federal level, but also at the state level. And I ask this question.
I can't answer that.
Oh, I can.
I don't like taxes.
Well, wait a minute.
Period.
Let me finish.
Okay. Well, you know
what's
have
happening.
Minutes, but go ahead.
What's happening is that Jews, quote unquote Jews, either the victims, the heirs, or the benefactors of what happened outside of the United States, when they are compensated, they do not have to pay federal tax nor state tax to many states for their compensation. But I know of a case when a black farmer received his compensation from
the
U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Again, I'm not doing. We're not changing. You can't change the subject that many times in one conversation in a half an hour.
Are we talking about discrimination?
But Bianchi, it's really very simple. If that, the one thing with the Jews, you're dealing with money that was outside of the United States, so U.S. tax law doesn't apply. But the other thing is,
no, it's money
if
that
it's
they
compensation
receive.
For something that happened prior to 1917, there should be no tax on it. If it's something that happened after 1917, then yes, there should be tax.
Hold on. Local call, your mic is on.
Good morning, Tracy. How you doing?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing all right. This is Floyd. And I was listening to what they were saying, and you know, I just want to say two things. First of all, I'm going to make it quick as I can. In cases of slavery and setback in this day and age, being those that it was already abolished, there's such a thing as a reformation. There is a law that says when someone sets you back, when you go in a court of law, the law goes according to where you should be. So slavery cannot remain in this place. If they do it nowadays, it just cannot remain in its place, and it has to be reformation for it. Other than that, it will just remain in its place. So to a lot of blacks out there, if you have in any way been discriminated against and set back, this reformation, because slavery just can't remain in its place. And I'm just going to close with that, and I'll be talking to you soon.
All right, thanks.
Well, the U.S. government has stolen from a lot of different groups, not only the slaves. They stole from the American Indians. They stole from the Germans during World War One. People don't realize Germans were interned during World War One the same way that the Japanese were interned during World War Two. In fact, Germans were interned in World War Two too, and their property was seized.
But again,
we had Mexicans that was expelled, who was born here in this country.
Of all the outrageousness, I would probably say the indigenous peoples and the black people were the ones that were most wronged by the government.
It's because I'm saying government. I'm saying it was just a culture, and it was a culture of suppression.
But it wasn't a culture across the entire country, because the things you described to me,
it was,
from what I understand, were not happening in Canton.
That's not true. It wasn't happening in 1960, but it was happening in Canton. You can't go.
I'm telling you right now.
I'm telling you right now. If you go ask your black friend that you only had one in Canton, ask him how he felt. He will tell you he played along with it. But you do not know, as a black person, was he going to be inoculated to Canton, Ohio?
No, what I'm trying to tell you is, because you talked about the theater here in Youngstown.
And I'm saying
Uncle Jerry, who was in his 80s, said that there was no segregation at the Palace Theater in Canton in the 60s.
And what I'm saying to you, the 50s and 60s, but I'm telling you, there may not have been, but he better not walk in there with a white girl. And he better not walk
home.
And he can't walk home alone. And there was segregation when he went to the grocery store. He was being discriminated against just by the color of his skin, even in Canton. Across this globe, in New York City, no matter where you were, African Americans during that period of time were feeling actually being suppressed. And you can go ask him.
It was many black men that was married to white women back in the early 1900s.
And they were having a very difficult time. Because as a matter of fact, today, it ain't all a piece of cake. In 2014, as we talk about it live on the radio.
Yeah, but Tracy, the thing is,
I want you to know.
Hello.
Yeah, what Tracy doesn't understand, the system of white supremacy. See, she doesn't understand. That's the reason why African Americans have been vilified for so long, because under a system of white supremacy, they can't allow any racial mixing to occur on a large level, otherwise that'll wipe out the white race. So you have to suppress blacks
by all means, guys. Man, you don't need to get up off this white supremacy stuff, man. That's crazy.
Look, man, these are real systems of power that are in place in your world today, and you need to understand how they operate. Otherwise, when you talk politics. Politics or economics, you won't understand what is the underlying cause behind different policies that happen to be implemented in your world if you don't understand systems of white supremacy.
Listen, I don't care. I give no man that much power.
It's not about what power you give a particular man. These are systems of power that are in place that are beyond one person.
White supremacy do exist, and I can give you examples of it. You got to know what you're looking at in order to identify. I tell you what, in your city where you have blighted areas, those areas usually are areas that was occupied by black people. It had been a state legislature, like here in St. Louis, where they passed what's called the Team 4 plan. And in the plan, when it was first studied by university students, and as it had worked out, that areas that was defined in a certain geographical area of the city, they would have services cut, there would be redlining, there would be blah, 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 that was designed to move black people out of the area. And
right.
You go to that area today, that did happen. And then they allowed the city to create a agency, land clearance or redevelopment, that could acquire these properties and land bank them for future use.
But also I wanted to answer this cat girl is talking about the beaners that are coming across the border. What she doesn't understand about the Mexicans, that come across the border, they are of the lower class. Over 50% of the people who live in Latin America, they happen to be white people. So therefore, even if you had a system where the Latin American people took over America, the people that would be in charge would still be white, because most of the people who are at the top of those societies, the people are white. So that's why I'm saying that the system of white supremacy is something that's global. It's all over the world. And practically any society that you go into, the people who are at the top of the society are people who are white. The only societies where white people are not at the top happen to be societies that are...
Well, they wouldn't control the politics.
That are over in Africa.
Eventually. They wouldn't control the politics eventually.
Yeah.
You don't control the politics, then you as a... "quote unquote" of this white supremacy group. Your power lies in your ability is to try to make economic impacts. Your ability to make political impacts and social impacts, if you are not a numerical majority, is going to be diminished tremendously.
But what people, you know, everybody needs to read the book by Dr. Welsing, where she talked in the ISIS papers that. This is a system that is put into place to prevent any kind of racial mixing, because if they had racial mixing on a massive scale, that would wipe out the white race. I mean, you wouldn't have a white race because the whole trait of having dark skin happens to be a dominant trait.
I don't believe that. I think she's wrong there, because every time you look around, there's something going on in the name of diversity, multiculturalism, so on.
But it's only diversity among certain groups that they want to see more in the society, namely people who are Indian, Asian, people who are from Latin America. And like I just said, if you go into any of those societies, the people who are at the top are the people who have very light skin.
It's in your black areas where they promote that more often than anything else.
Of Chinese society are the Chinese who almost look Caucasian, who almost look like they're white people. So what I'm saying is that the white power structure is going to, and I see what you're saying.
I do agree. I agree there. I see what you're saying now.
Right. So what I'm saying is the white power structure is always going to win if they're dealing with Latin America or if they're dealing with Asia. The only problem that they have is when they're dealing with sub-Saharan Africa. See, if they got to deal with
sub-Saharan
Africans, if they try to intermix with them, they're going to lose out in terms of their ability to get back to whiteness. So that's why I'm saying that there is a system in place to keep people who have very dark skin out of the mix of politics and any type of economics on a large scale.
Well, that ain't going. But if you look at today, how they'll be being defeated on the economic level is the fact that you got countries, powerful countries, numerical powerful countries, who are coming together to devoid themselves of that quote unquote white system monetary way of doing things.
But they're not doing it. But as far as how successful they are at it, I don't think
They are putting in the mechanisms to do that. You know, the AU at the African Summit just recently voted to create their own monetary system. Look what the
but the only thing about Africa is Africa is being propelled by economic forces coming out of China. And the Chinese are really the ones that are backing the new economies in a lot of the African nations. And like I said, in the Chinese society, you have a system of white supremacy inside that society as well, because the Chinese that are at the top of the Chinese society are Chinese who almost look like they're Caucasian people.
Well,
so the
ones that's over there in Africa that are doing business don't look nothing like no Caucasians to me. But any country is open for what's called FDI. I'm sorry. FDI, which is foreign direct investment. And it does have to do something. It depends. The critical thing is how you control that foreign investment. What type of leeway does you get? What type of stipulations,
right,
rules, and regulations do you put on?
Right. And that's what I'm saying, that the Chinese are not giving the Africans that much leeway. The Chinese are going to control a lot of those economies.
No,
they're going to bring their people
Chinese
over there. They're going to operate a lot of the businesses. And now, how much the African people will be self-reliant, will they'll be able to control those economies, that remains to be seen. Because even now, you don't have major manufacturing even now occurring in Africa on the same scale as you have in Asia. So we have yet to see that occur on the continent. But the thing is will the Africans who are in business, will they be a self-reliant group? Will they be able to operate those economies without any outside types of interference? I'm not sure that has occurred as yet.
Well, Zimbabwe is doing very good with their tobacco industry.
But the only thing is their leader, Mugabe, he appears as, you know, somebody who's unstable. A lot of people are, you know, because he said he doesn't want the whites to own any land or any businesses. A lot of people see him as being unstable. And he's
that's
been
not
power
unstable.
For, like,
that's just
over
a,
40
and
years.
And I'm back. And we were talking about this, and Sticks and I are having this conversation, because he's telling me, you know, there are places down in Canton that weren't like that. And I'm telling you, as a black person in America, you can ask any black person in America that is over the age of 45, 50, they will tell you experiences that will twinkle your toes and make your eyes glisten, not because they want your sympathy, but we want you to understand, it's still, you may not have been that way, your family may have been different, but there was a segregation that was going on all the way through the 80s and 90s, and especially during the 60s, North and South, and before, that you just didn't talk about. It was just the culture, it was just the way of life, and it was just the atmosphere. Can't get around it, can't get over it, can't get under it. It is what it is, and we just dealt with it. You realize that, don't you? I just want you to understand that. And I'm saying, and I said earlier, people want people to say, well, it was worse than this. We just want you to acknowledge it. Just because you perceive that everything was good, you got to go ask Gene what it was like. Go on, hey, how did it really feel being the only one in town? Have that conversation. He will blow your mind. I promise you, and I've never met him. You're like, what? Absolutely. Just because white was always right. And you didn't get a fair shake. You know, you could be the best dancer but couldn't be on the cheerleading squad. The best gymnast and couldn't play. You could be the best starting quarterback, but you couldn't play quarterback because you weren't smart enough. So we go into 2000, the millennium, And we're just getting to a place where they say, oh, blacks can be quarterbacks, but you can't be a coach.
Tony Dungy.
Okay, you can name one. Woohoo!
I don't know nothing about football.
That's what I'm just saying. There's one. Maybe there's more now, but you have to understand the mindset of America was you cannot be here. You can't be the captain of the football team. You're not smart enough. You might have the physique to play it. You might have the strength and the skill, but you're not smart enough. What does that mean? Well, you just can't. There's no way. And so you can't be the quarterback because he's the captain of the team. You definitely can't be the coach.
How'd you explain Brad Daugherty?
And when was he the quarterback?
He wasn't a quarterback. He played for the Cavs, and then he built his own NASCAR team in the 80s.
And so he was only one? You got one?
We're talking NASCAR.
Right,
here.
But you got one? There's one?
Team owner?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
There's only one? One black team owner?
Right.
How many teams are there?
In the top series?
Yeah.
40.
And you got one. It's like the media.
Seeing how it takes a couple of $100 million.
Doesn't matter. Let's go back when Bill Cosby back in the 80s tried to buy CBS. And they told him, no way, you can't do that. He's got the money. No, you can't have it.
By the way, who did that?
I don't remember.
Was it CBS or was it the FCC?
No, I don't think it was the FCC.
That was NBC. Yes.
And who told him he couldn't own it?
He tried to buy NBC because the Cosby Show was making so much money for the network, and they refused to sell it to him.
Was it for sale?
Yeah,
it was for sale. He was trying to put together a group to buy it, and because he was the head person in the group, the head investor, they wouldn't sell it to that group.
Yeah, you know he bought the little rascals as well.
Oh, I thought that was Michael.
He did
Jackson.
What?
No, he had Michael Jackson
no,
had the Beatles
Bill
catalog. You
ain't
heard
Bill Cosby? Yeah, Bill Cosby
you
did that.
You didn't hear the Beatles. You didn't hear the Beatles song on nothing until Michael Jackson died.
Yeah, because Bill Cosby didn't like the way that Buckwheat and Stymie were portrayed, so he bought the rights so they wouldn't know it could be exploited.
Yeah, I haven't seen Little Rascals on TV in years. But you know, they did the same thing to Glenn Beck with Al Jazeera, too.
What?
Shut him out. Refused to sell it to him. Because they didn't like his politics.
Okay. But again, they have a way of getting around things. They didn't like his politics. They just said, I don't think you ought to own that.
Well, they couldn't come right out and say it's because of your color.
Come on, man.
And with all the, basketball players that have been legendary in the NBA, the only majority owner is Michael Jordan. That's ridiculous.
He's the only one that
actually owns a team outright, and you've had many black men who have been people who have been legends in the NBA.
Right.
Philadelphia, a question for you. What part ownership does Bob Johnson have? Does he have a minority piece?
In terms of him, he's like a co-owner with Michael Jordan of the Charlotte Bobcats.
So they're all together in that.
Now
let me ask you this because I don't know this. How many stick and ball athletes have the economic prowess to pull off part ownership in a team?
Most of them do, until now. You can't write a $2.2 billion check. That leap went a little bit far because the Cavs were not worth it. But what the Cavs did and what's going on with
Cavs?
Donald...
Not the Cavs.
Oh, not the Cavs. That's the Gilbert. Oh, the Clippers.
The Clippers, yeah. The Cavs ain't for sale.
I don't know.
And Rubio says they can't have LeBron back either.
Oh, see, we're not thinking about them. You know, LeBron, he made the front page of USA Today. Above the fold. The RNC going to Cleveland made below the fold. sorry about that, guys. What I'm saying is, they have the money to do it. Now it may be a little bit more difficult, but they have the money. They have the wherewithal to do it. Magic Johnson has the wherewithal in the business sense to get it done. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then also,
you know,
when it comes to the other owners, a lot of them, they come from other types of businesses. They have no expertise in sports at the time that they buy those teams.
Look
Whereas
at her, look
you
at
have
her.
A person who actually knows the sport, they can put together a group of people. Somebody else in the group can have the expertise in marketing and business, and they can be the majority owner, and they can own the team, but they don't want to set up those types of investment groups for athletes.
But look at her, Washington, who lives here, who has a McDonald's franchise. And, I mean, he is one of the largest McDonald's franchise owners, mm-hmm. and he's the largest minority franchise owner of a McDonald's in the McDonald's corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And he started in baseball. He's a baseball player. I mean, there are guys out there that can do it if you give them opportunity.
Right.
Well,
Shaquille O'Neal just graduated
and got his business degree. He owns, 156 five-brother restaurants? And
yeah.
He's
PhD.
On track to become, he's on track to become a billionaire here real soon.
Absolutely. I mean,
but the only thing we're saying is, look how long in time it took for all this to happen. You've had hundreds or probably thousands of black men to go through these leagues, and they were legends in these leagues, but they weren't allowed to put together these investment groups to actually buy these teams.
But you had millionaires during the height of Jim Crow and slavery too. That was black.
And six, you have to understand, it wasn't because they didn't have it. They weren't allowed to buy it. It's not that they didn't have the money. It's not that they didn't have the cash. Their money was not good enough to be a part of the club.
There's a lot of people that happens to, though.
No, no.
Yeah,
not
but
like
it
that.
Happens to them for
not
other
like
reasons
that.
Than black, being black. Though.
They could have had a bad background. It could have been a lot. This was just because you're colored. We don't want no colored in here. Donald Sterling, what he said about him not being there, he had the mindset of what that whole generation had. We don't want you here. Now, I'll sleep with your women, but I don't want you here. That's real.
Yeah,
it's very, very real.
In fact,
there's a reason why you can name how many black governors of states you've had. Republican
right.
or Democrat, you can name them
right.
off of one hand. Because when it comes
down
to your leadership, we
don't
trust you
to be a candidate. I mean, either party,
and we don't.
I mean, the Democrats or the Republicans, they don't want to groom black men to be any type of national candidate for governor or for U.S. Senate. They don't want to do that because then you'd be giving them too much power.
And I'm talking about Republican and Democrat, because when you put a Republican
right.
up, and I'll go back to Ken Blackwell. Ken Blackwell actually has ownership. He owned a conglomerate of radio stations.
I liked him.
He had a business savvy. He was financially independent on his own, so you didn't have to worry about him trying to make ends meet on a governor's salary because he was rich running land. He owned part of the Cincinnati Reds. But when it came time for him being governor, even Republicans backed up from him.
Mm-hmm.
That's real.
I know that happened. It wasn't right.
We ain't talking about right. We're talking about what happened. We're talking about what's going on in life. And he was
right.
the best man for the job. Way, way, way better than Strickland. Way, way, way better than Strickland.
I mean,
I got a dog
but basically
around.
Also,
that's what
it
I mean.
Shouldn't be the
so
case.
Hold on, Philadelphia women. So how in the world do you pick a man where your dog is better than Strickland, but you won't put a black man in, and he is the most qualified for the job?
You got me.
So, and this was just in recent years. This is only about 8 years ago. This is real. And it still goes on today. Do you realize that the Democrats went after Charlie Rangel not because of his taxes, but because of where he was going in power on ways and means? It had nothing to do with his taxes. But he was getting ready to become chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, and you cannot give that man that much power.
But the thing
you've
with Charles Brangle is he's 85 years old. He needs to step down and give somebody
well,
else
that, no,
chance.
But hold on, Philadelphia. It wasn't about his age. Because we've got white men who've been older and more senile than Charlie Brangle who've been in power. It was about who he was and what he was going to represent.
Yeah, look
and
at
even
Robert
I,
Byrd.
Let me see. I disagree with Charlie Brangle's politics all over the place. Maxine Waters. If you, she was in line. Who's got their TV radio on? He was.
Didn't
she
Byrd,
was in line to become.
Didn't,
hold on.
Didn't Byrd
she was in line to. Be, hold on. She was in line to become a ranking member,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden
mm-hmm.
there comes an ethics charge. Now, don't get me wrong. I despise her policy, her politics. But why do you think she's not there? Because she's got a big mouth. They used her when they needed her, but they don't want her to become a ranking member because she was in line for speaker. That's real
mm-hmm.
in 2014. So you cannot tell me, well, 40 years ago, this is what happened. And it makes a difference. And it's still going on today. And because of black people and how they deal with themselves and their own politics, they're making it worse. Go ahead, Eric.
Didn't Robert Byrd play a Confederate soldier in a movie a while back?
Robert? No.
No.
Robert Byrd was a Grand Kleagle in the KKK.
Yeah, but he said he was sorry, so it was okay.
Or a Grand Wizard or something.
He was a Grand Wizard. But he said he was sorry, so
yeah.
it was okay.
Right. And Bill Clinton said he was just doing what he had to do at the time.
But they wouldn't give Strom Thurmond the same credit.
Right.
Okay, just making sure I
Strom
got that right.
Strom Thurmond was a member of the Klan, too.
That's what I'm saying.
The thing is, they give Democrats a pass for being a member of the Klan, and they won't give Republicans a pass.
They say all Republicans are racist because they had one, but Democrats, they say, I'm sorry, and it's okay.
Well, both parties are working for corporate America at this point in time, so they don't have the people's interests at heart at all.
Well,
the main difference with
the
liberals is the liberals think that they're more educated and they're more enlightened.
We just won't take the power we have.
Yeah.
No, we just won't take the power we have. The fact that Eric Cantor just got dethroned proves that the people have power if they want to take it.
That's correct.
But people don't want to take the power that they can take.
And they didn't necessarily take it down there. He lost it. See, he didn't win the race. They didn't put him out. He lost the race.
Well, he ignored his district.
That's what I'm saying. So they didn't put him out. He lost the race.
And the thing that's going on in Mississippi right now ain't over.
Well, the thing in Mississippi was a little bit different, but
it
showed the true colors.
Of the establishment.
It showed the true colors of how people view people and how they use, of how people are pawns.
Mm-hmm.
It shows them
And we've talked about this before. At this stage of the game, it's getting to be based on economics rather than skin color.
But skin color still plays a part in it. As
yeah,
long
it still
as you
plays
don't,
a part.
You still can't go out of your zone.
White supremacy is still dominant in the world.
You can't go out of your zone.
When you say your zone, what are you talking about?
You won't go in there's a reason why Condoleezza Rice won't run. There's a reason why Colin Powell would not run. There's a reason why Herman Cain, they
got
went
up. Chopped off at the knees.
Right. There's a reason why Obama is there.
Mm-hmm.
Don't think they're not using his race
for
their own agenda.
Yeah.
Even if I'm talking about for the race,
and his international background too.
No,
both of those things.
Listen to what I'm saying. But they're using his race as a way of getting their agenda ahead.
Right.
Because of his race, he is getting away with things that no other man could have. So when Henry Kissinger says he is the one who could actually advance the one world order, you have to understand Obama is doing some things, and because of his race, he's getting a pass.
Yeah.
And because
Obama
if you look
is
at what
a
happened,
puppet of George Soros.
But well, listen,
and
right,
many
on,
of the
right.
people who are the dominant liberals
this
who,
is, this is
who
want
to see America move more towards a European type of socialism.
this is not about puppetry. This is not about being, I'm saying how the people view him and go against him. If you go back to Bill Clinton when he got impeached, the African-American community so overwhelmingly supported him with his Lewinsky and his lie that they could not get him out of office. They could not pressure him because even during the time, he was still supported. If you take the same group of people, even now, African-Americans, and there are people out there, liberals out there in the Democrat Party that support this president so overwhelmingly, you really can't get the truth out of anything that goes on in Washington right now.
No, you can't, because like I said, Washington is basically under a corporate structure. I mean, the corporations are the ones that run Washington. It's not the people.
But it's not about corporations and or about who's running. It's about how they're manipulating the people by using the president.
Yeah. Because
they're manipulating all of the electorate,
John. Because they knew that the demographics of the country were changing and the people wanted to see a president of color. They didn't want to see all of these white men in these positions of power, especially the president. So
yeah,
people want to see something different.
This wasn't about seeing something different. This wasn't about seeing something different. This was about...
She went, that was my hair, the Clooney lady.
Who is that? Sounds like...
Nobody here.
I care.
This is about being able to manipulate a massive group of people.
Right.
Because the president, right now, the people could rise up against the president and make him and make Congress do the right thing. This is about manipulating people to make them apathetic.
But in order to manipulate people,
they didn't
to manipulate the images.
That's what I'm saying. They didn't put him in there because they could use him. They put him in there because he was usable.
But what I'm saying is in order to manipulate the people, you have to manipulate the media images that they see. And Obama is a media image, and his wife is a media image that they wanted to use to try to get for
you're missing
this
my point.
Agenda, which is socialist in nature, that they wanted to see the country move into. And they used Obama
point,
and his family to get this forth.
John, you missed my point. Because it's all what I'm saying is, quiet as it's kept, it's really not about Barack Hussein Obama.
No, it's not about him.
It was about
us. It's about this agenda that they want.
No, it's about us. It's about the apathy of the American people.
I think at this point the American people don't matter. It's about large corporations and their ability to manipulate the masses.
Billy, we can take it back anytime we want it. We just don't want to take the time and effort to take it back.
But the people are so brainwashed at this point by the media and by technology, they don't have the mind power to take it back.
What I'm saying to you is, I'm watching a power play getting ready to take place in Youngstown in the next 6 months, and this is where we live, and Youngstown is a very, very big component when it comes to the Electoral College of the state of Ohio and how they vote. And so they're getting ready to do a power play here, and no one's paying attention to the power play they're getting ready to do because they're not understanding that how much power they have. So they're going to come in here in a few weeks, and they're going to manipulate this area because they don't want to lose control over it. And so they need to get the people in and lull them back to sleep and then wake them up to mobilize what they need to do for the 2016 election.
Are we going to have voter suppression again in 2016?
No. They're doing something different right now.
Oh, okay.
And so what they're doing is they're making sure that they have the voices to manipulate the people, especially people of color. So the Pied Piper can sing them back to the polls and then make them cut their throats. And we're not smart enough, and our eyes are not open enough to really see what's going on. I'll be right back.
Well, this is one of the reasons why there's so much surveillance going on and you have so much data mining occurring on the Internet, because they're trying to lock down what are the tendencies of these different demographic groups so that they can be able to control everything about you. And they can anticipate what you'll do before you actually do it. So that's the reason why you're moving more into a surveillance state, like George Orwell talked about in his book 1984. where, you know, you're going to have the government's going to have so much information on you that they're almost going to be like thought police, where they'll be able to anticipate everything that you do. This is the type of society we're moving into. Hello?
I hope it's not going to happen. I truly hope it's not going to happen, what you're just saying.
Well, all of the signs are there. All of the signs, and what Edward Snowden was talking about, he just happened to be somebody who just wanted to expose the extent of the surveillance that's actually going on. Maybe the way he went about it, he might have jeopardized the lives of people who were working in the secret, in any type of intelligence overseas. But a lot of what he said was definitely true. Then the government had to turn around and say, yes, these programs exist. But the reason why they exist is because we have an existential war that's going on with people in the Middle East, because the people in the Middle East who are Islamic, they see the West as being more of a decadent society, and they want to go against people who they believe are evil. And that's the reason why they're plotting all these terrorist attacks, probably against the West, because they want to be able to have a united front of those nations that are Islamic, so that they can see their Mahdi come back or their Messiah come back, because they're going by what they believe as prophecy, as stated in their holy book. You know, so we're basically fighting a war that's more about two different types of philosophies that want to dominate the world. That's basically what's going on. So that's the reason why we're engaged in all this surveillance, because we have all these immigrants in this country. Some of them come from these regions, and we don't know who these people are. We've let them in the country because America needs a workforce. They need people to work, you know, and they don't have enough people who have expertise in these different industries where they need people to work in. So they have to get these people from India and from Pakistan and from Saudi Arabia, but they don't know who these people are. They don't know what their religious background is. They don't know if they're dealing with a radical or somebody who's a terrorist or somebody who's a fanatic. So that's the reason why they got to monitor all the phone calls to see if there's terrorist plots going on.
But the problem with what you're saying is I truly believe when it comes to terrorists and things like that, we choose to say that those people are terrorists because they're against us. But as soon as they do something that is for us, we don't consider them terrorists. So we have to know a little bit about...
But that's the game that America's played for a very long time. They play one side against the other. And that's basically what the intelligence business is about. It's about playing chess. And it's about getting people who are operatives inside countries to go get the intelligence for you. Then you make promises to the person, but you don't fulfill all your promises. And you do that so that you have an advantage over the people who are in power in these different nations that they're trying to have some control over. So that's basically aspects of the intelligence business that's been going on since the CIA was founded. And that's the reason why the CIA has a separate budget outside of the governmental budget. They don't want to tell you the amount of money they spend, because they spend a lot of money bribing people all over the world to get them the intelligence of these foreign nations so they can use this information actually against these countries.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with that. The thing is, a lot of Americans don't know their past, don't know their history, don't know their thing. And I don't agree that a lot of them, maybe part of them it is because, like you said, of religion, but I think a lot of them is part of them. It's about the blowback that we were responsible for the CIA, and they were basically saying to them, you know what, you're responsible for killing all those people, my family, my house, whatever, so I'm going to hate you. It would be the same reaction if China decided tomorrow to bomb the United States. We would not be selling in. We would not be saying this, anything. We would not be like saying, oh, it's UPIA for China. We all would be hating China also. So I think it is about blowback, like Ron Paul said in his book Revolution. I think that's the prime reason that they're against us. They're sick and tired of us being the police of the world, and I agree with him. We should never be the police of the world. We should help people who want to be helped. And some nations don't want to be helped, I'm sorry to say. And some nations need to be governed by what they want. It's not our country. It's their country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm a little bit sick and tired of us interfering every time there is something. Oh, yeah, we need to do this. We need to, why don't we take out all the army, all the stuff in a different level, and just bring them back to the United States? Why don't we take care of our own first and become a great nation, less poverty, great job, great opportunity for everybody, and focus on that. Put all the money back instead of having wars and things like that. Put all the money back to Americans. Put the money back that it's normal that we have a minimum wage of $20 or whatever. It's not normal.
Well,
that.
It's like Noam Chomsky said, you know, America is more of an imperialist power now. We're like Imperial Rome.
Yeah.
Even though we don't want to conquer different territories and claim them as our own, we want our influence in those regions. So we're playing more of a psychological game around the world. That's the reason why we act as a police state, because we want our image to be projected as being a global power around the world. That's the reason why we're involved in all these conflicts.
And that's the reason why Obama got voted in also. And I'm sorry to say, we were basically the rest of the world didn't like us during the time of George Bush. You can say whatever you want and everything, but trust me now, do a survey, the rest of the world hated us when we had George Bush. You say, how come you're crazy? You know? When Obama
because George Bush was seen as a person who was going to...
The number is 347-945-5229. And that sticks in the studio with me today. It's Wednesday, and it's 37 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. And I am... Hey, Stanley, how are you this morning?
I'm okay. I'm good. I'm very good. I'm listening to what you just said. I agree partially on what you said. Another part, I don't. I really agree on Ron Paul's philosophy when it comes to foreign things. I really believe on blowback. I really believe that we need to take care of our own and be the example of the world, because we're not. We're not the example of the world. We've done a lot of crazy things around the world that we need to bring back all the army, all the stuff, bring back all the money that we have around the world and concentrate on us. Get the best health care we need to. Get the best this that we need to. Make sure that everybody's focused on this. Bring all those million and billions of dollars and focus on us and make our nation great, and then we'll concentrate on others.
Can I tell you something? The problem is when I tell you free health care is not going to do it for you, you get mad at me.
Why not? I don't agree with you. If we take all the army, all the money on the army, and we decide to become the best healthcare around the world and have it for free, it would be possible.
Hey, Stanley, how's the VA working out for them?
Listen. The government society at large, the economics of our government is very, very complex. Our foreign policy is very complex. But why not make it to where you have health care available to those who cannot afford it and those who cannot attain it for themselves? But to make a blanket free health care across this country and you not have to be a participant in it and make it a government nationalized health system is not the smartest thing for you to do. When I can give you opportunity so that you can go and get it on your own. What we're doing here is we are making it to where we're making more and more people dependent on a system that can eventually fail them instead of making them independent on a society or on themselves where they can always be there for themselves. Because making health care free for everyone does not strengthen the middle class. It weakens them.
I mean, do you agree with Ron Paul on health care?
No, I agree. Or I didn't hear the thing of Ron Paul on health care. I agree with Ron
Paul in the debate, the question was posed to Ron Paul. If you've got a 30-year-old person making $50,000 a year and he chooses not to buy health care, should the hospital be forced to treat him? And he said, no, I agree with that. Do you agree with that or not?
No, I don't agree with that.
But you know the thing with the healthcare.
I think healthcare should be a privilege. It should be the pursuit of happiness. If you don't have your health, you don't have happiness.
But the thing is, we've got to understand, the reason why healthcare is where it is right now is because we are creating people to become gluttonous.
Before Obamacare, how was it being paid, Tracy?
Was it a tax burden? In some ways, yes. It was actually an insurance burden, a tax burden, and a societal burden.
This is what I'm saying.
Hold on. But let me say this. But the problem that they had is they didn't make it accessible to you if you couldn't afford it for maintenance and for pre-screenings and for your testing.
But that portion of that was a tax burden. If you're going to require people to go out and get it on their own, doggone it, give them that tax money back. Why is it that you want to keep the taxes and say, hey, you got to go out and get it on your own?
Well, we need to go back.
Well, what they're doing now is government
subsidies. We need to go back. We need to go back and look at the history of when the employer-based health care system came into place, which was the Second World War. Prior to that, everybody paid for their own health care, or you went to the community or county hospital. And it was when the employer started paying for health insurance, people quit paying attention to what health care cost. And that's when a lot of the problems started. Another problem is our ability to take care of people has outstripped our ability to pay for it, because we spend more money on the last 90 days of life on average than we do the previous 90 years. And those are two things that we need to look at.
That got everybody quiet.
Yeah, it's crickets. But, you know, I mean, what is wrong for the average family who has very little health problems with the Carson idea of health savings accounts and catastrophic care?
But because you have to have it.
And not only that, Trey.
Go ahead, Trey, Eric.
I mean, we hear all about these problems with health care and there's no money. But the president just asked for $4 billion to help illegal aliens. I mean, I don't get this government and the way they just get to choose the way to spend money.
What's wrong with helping the aliens out? Why are you discriminating against aliens?
I know. I'm discriminating, but, you know.
$3.7 billion they want.
Yeah.
Why are you discriminating against the aliens? See, there you go. Don't discriminate against the aliens.
Just look at the economics of healthcare.
They're running away from they're running away from gang violence.
No, they're not. You know what they're running away from? A military coup and a dictator. I learned that yesterday. In 2008, there was a military coup in Honduras.
I was trying to be sarcastic. Oh,
but also, you have a lot of drug gangs that are in Honduras that are working with the Mexican cartels, and it's a lot of
violence and murder.
Hey!
Listen. Whoa, I was being sarcastic. Go back to what your comment was before, Eric. Dang.
I mean, if that's the case, then the south side of Chicago should be considered a war zone, and they should be refugees too.
Right.
I agree.
I would rather turn the south side of Chicago into a refugee zone than I would taking care of a bunch of Hondurans. I mean, we don't realize how this is going to affect the local area.
Don't go back to your conversations. I just made a sarcastic comment, and you guys just took it off on another.
We're talking about the immigrants, the illegal immigrants. You don't realize the Honduran population that's right down here just south of you in Salem, Ohio.
Can I say this? You said something about health care. It was about health care. It was about paying for health care. It was about government control.
Okay.
It was about spending.
Let's go back
to where you were.
Way back machine. If your doctor gave you a script for an MRI and you had to pay for it out of pocket, you'd be shopping around town to find the cheapest MRI machine.
Let me say this. We are not taught, and I've got to go back to what Dr. Matt says. We are not taught preventive medicine.
Right. Western medicine does trauma very well.
Right, and because of pharmaceutical companies, and even in the health care bill that's coming up, or the Affordable Health Care Act,
there's no money in that for what Dr. Matt does.
No, there's not. And the pharmaceutical companies are the only ones that really win. The insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies are the ones that win.
The pharmaceutical companies paid to close the donut hole out of their own pockets.
We, as the American people, we are losing, and you don't necessarily want your government, again, going back to independence. We are making ourselves too dependent upon a society that's not going to depend on us, and it's not going to be there when we need them. And we need to understand that we are going to have to take back our country. And that sounds like a Tea Party statement. Everybody got mad when the Tea Party says it. But you have to understand, you've got to take back your individual freedoms and your individual rights, because if you don't, you lose.
Well, people don't understand. Every society that puts the collective above the individual ends up in firing squads and barbed wire. And
it's not going to be firing squads and barbed wire. What's going to happen is you're losing your freedom. You're losing your independence.
You'll be standing in line for a scrap of bread.
You won't be standing in line.
Okay, they'll send you the scrap of bread to your house.
No, you'll just be dependent upon them for the scrap.
That's what I'm saying.
And when I'm saying this, I don't think we understand that when you're on welfare, when you're on public assistance, they tell you how much you can make. They tell you how much you can drive. When you put your loved one into a, let me say this, and let me get it out. When you put your loved one into a nursing home,
you actually give
all of their savings, all of their insurance, everything that they've paid for. If you don't have long-term senior care that is going to be paid for by your insurance, you give that right up. And everything that you own is in it.
Right.
So the house that your grandfather built with his blood, sweat, and tears that he expected to have for his children's children's children, they take it and they sell it on the market.
That's right.
You are dependent upon the government.
That's right. The best thing that an old person can hope to do is get sick and die quick.
And again, and we don't understand.
Financially.
When you look at what your whole sum total of your life that is taken from you, you can't even have cash value in your insurance.
But
we don't understand that when you depend upon the government, the system will never give you the best quality of care. I went to a nursing home in Michigan not too long ago, and it looked like a prison for old people. You
that's
had, like,
what it
four
is.
Or five people. That's bad. How do you put your purse?
Well, that's
your
why.
One?
That's why you have to have private retirement accounts so you can go to an assisted living facility and not deal with the nursing homes.
But when you look at how much you got to have disposable income.
Right. But what I'm saying is you have to
be
able to develop your own retirement account.
You've got to have disposable income to be able to pay for
the
long-term insurance for senior care. And if you buy it in your 20s and you're smart, you can get it. But when you go to your 50s and 60s and you try to pay for it, it's $130, $170, $200 or $300. And God forbid if you have any conditions when you go.
Yeah, Tracy, I went to a nursing home during Christmas time, and it was just so depressing. Those people didn't even know me from Adam, and they were just happy to see somebody beside the nurses. They were talking to me, and they didn't even know me.
I mean, we need to understand, when you depend upon the system will never give back to you what you deserve. And that's why we have to make a stronger middle class and become independent again.
Well, and that is big government's biggest fear, is a financially independent middle class.
No, that's thinking that cannot be controlled. And right now the middle class is being controlled by the media, which is being controlled by people who are elitist.
But if you're being controlled by the media, pretty soon you will not be. They just said that it went over 51% now. More than 51% of American homes get some form of a government check.
That's what I'm saying.
And once they get their hooks into you, they've got you.
They told people they were going to have pensions. So they worked in these mills and they worked in these places all these years. And when the deal went down, they didn't have pension. They don't have health care. They don't have anything that they were supposed to get.
Right.
And so now they're under a guaranteed pension program, which is a government-funded program. That goes
30 cents on the dollar.
Absolutely. They lied to them. And the government allowed them to lie to them.
But why do we keep forgetting it? That's been going on for 40 years. Why do we keep falling for the same lie? Why do we get people? I got a friend that works for a company. They just voted out their 401k to vote in a guaranteed pension from the company. Who in their right mind, after 40 years of having a pension stolen from them and seeing all your neighbors, does that?
Again, it's not about what you see. They don't even let you know. Let's be real about this. You don't know.
Who doesn't know that?
A lot of people don't
How
know.
How many people have
well, Harry
Reid said to pick up the calls? They don't know. People don't know. It's not like on the news at night they're telling you this is what's happening. They don't put this in the front page of the newspaper. They don't tell you where to get it. It's just like Black History.
How many people in this valley don't have a relative that's had their pension stolen?
It's not like I told you. You don't go out and tell people that I'm living on crackers and dog food because I had my pension stolen. Yeah, go ahead, Eric.
Tomorrow they're going to let people from the media come down to the southern border. But guess what? No recording devices, and they're not allowed to talk to the staff.
So they can't hear their cell phones, huh?
Yeah, no cameras, no phones, and you can't talk to the staff or the illegal immigrants. I thought this was America, not Russia.
That's what I'm saying. They don't want you to know the truth. They don't want you to know. 214, your mic is on.
Oh, hi, it's Kat. Y'all are all over the place today. I don't even know where to start. What do y'all want to talk about?
I only got 10 more minutes. I'm done.
Well, you know, Mexico has opened up their oil industry for private investment. I mean, would you all move to where there's been some really great jobs? By 2040, it's going to be booming again.
Say this again, Kat. Over here.
I said by 2035 to 2040, this country's going to be booming again. All this negativity and gloom and doom, I mean, when you all talk about the black community and white community, money's money. I don't care. If you make a pair of flip-flops and it's made by a black company that only hires black people and they're good flip-flops, I'd buy those flip-flops. So, I just don't understand. You have to look at the economics. What?
You live in Texas, right?
Yeah.
You said by 2035, right?
Yeah.
So the gloom and doom that I have right now is because inside of the projections for 2035 and 2050, every other classification of people will have grown by then, and African Americans will be at a stalemate. They will not have grown by 2050.
Because African Americans, if I can judge African Americans by what I hear on those Blog Talk radio shows, is you keep talking about the black community and your own economics and what you have to do, and you're just gonna have to listen to me tell you this and not think of me as a racist. You're just gonna have to align yourself with these white people and do what they do to make them to make yourself richer. And if you go in with some white people and invest in some businesses, evidently the black, what you call the black community, is not doing it because you don't have your own banks like the Chinese do. Y'all are always fighting each other, so you've got to get together in groups and get with people who have the money. I worked for this guy during high school. And when I graduated, he told me to succeed, always associate myself with rich people. They'll always guide you in the right direction. And that was really good advice. Looking back now that I'm old, I realized that was excellent advice. Align yourself with people who have money and start some businesses that way. It doesn't matter what color your skin is.
And there was silence. We're here. I agree with you. That's what I'm trying to tell them. That's the point. That's the point right there. There you go. And quit being dependent on the government.
More government's going to just make you less of a
Tracy,
human being.
Hold on, Stanley. Let her finish. What did you say? More government's going to do what?
I'm a grandmother. I was a little kid when Kennedy was killed. I've seen it all. And I never thought, when schools were integrated, when I was in seventh grade, there was so much hope. I mean, there was just like so much like we're the same, we're equal, we're in this together. Boys wanted to be astronauts, didn't matter color of your skin and all this. And it's just like this shit has gone downhill in my lifetime. Anyway, I'm done.
Okay. Go ahead, Stanley.
I agree. Don't depend on government, but I could say this. Hey, don't depend on corporation also.
I didn't say, but the question is, you can depend on a corporation if you own it.
Yeah, exactly. Only if you own it.
So the question is,
if you don't Yeah, but that's the thing. 90% of people don't own up corporation.
But Stanley,
corporation.
Why
for their
is
life.
That? Why don't we own
because
it?
Because that's the mentality we've been taught. We've been taught to go get a degree, go get a whatever degree, and work for somebody and have a job. That's what we've
so
been taught.
So why don't we go get it? Why don't we go get this? Why don't we go and own it? That's my question. Yeah. That's it in a nutshell.
Exactly. I agree with you. That you will never hear from me that I don't agree with you. I've always told you, owning something is different than working for something.
So the question is, why are we not coming together and beginning to build with each other and working together, no matter what color your skin is, no matter who you are, with common-mindedness? Because I'm going back to my comment again about being dependent upon the government. Right now, I can only keep on going back to Julia. Julia said that the government wanted to be there from birth until death. I don't want to depend on the government from birth until death. That does not make me free. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hey. The young lady I was trying to tell her, you have to get into the arenas to be able to get around rich people. And a lot of times you're shunned from being in those arenas if your skin is darker than a brown paper bag. So, you know, I understand what she's saying, and she's absolutely right. You and I and several others have been able to overcome, you know, those barriers just by our diligence and our interest. But the thing is you have a lot of people that have been so taught that everybody that is white is their enemy and that they can't survive otherwise. Unless they got these people as their enemy, then, you know, they're kind of hit. What needs to happen is you have to teach an independence in the communities, like we've been saying, of course, you know that, but this is just to the lady from Texas. Independence. And once we get there, we'll be okay. That's somebody else talking.
Well, what we don't understand, a lot of us, is there's a lot of guys, a lot of millionaires riding around in pickup trucks. And we don't understand that guy is just as knowledgeable as the guy we see riding around in a Bentley in a suit.
Actually, he's more knowledgeable because he's got a pickup truck.
Right.
So go ahead, private caller. Your mic is on.
All right. Hey, Stanley. This is Joe.
Hi, Joe.
Okay.
Hey, Joe.
So let me bring in something I've been hearing for a while. Black people can't make it. All right, I don't understand why you're trying to succeed when you know that Whitey is going to keep you down. And the government is your friend. So you finally got me to be on your side. Okay? So I'm with you. Don't bother trying. Just, you know.
Just let him do it. Just let him steamroll over you, right?
You know, yeah, because why should blacks even make any effort whatsoever?
Because there's something called a dream, and the only way that you can make a dream a reality is by working it.
That's propaganda. That's propaganda.
That's not propaganda.
Hello?
Hey, listen, I'm
done.
Tracy. She cut us off. Hey, my friend, I was getting ready
to say.
Hey, the
phone's open if you guys want to keep on continue the conversation.
Hello.
I thought the head of the DNC was a woman.
Yeah.
You're in, whoever you are.
Okay, look. If you want to say that you can make it, fine. So go ahead with the wet dream. But the thing
is, we realize how the system operates, and you have a people who have a group psychology that's been developed over 400 years, and they had 50 years of Jim Crow after that. So you know these.
John, that's 400
types
years
of,
you're talking about. That 400
these
years
types
you're talking
of,
about.
Say
how
what?
Can that be 400 years?
What I'm saying is that you have a people that's been oppressed for 450 years. They were in slavery for 400 years. They were under Jim Crow for close to 100 years. So you got 500 years of oppression on
And that's the reason why blacks can't make it. I agree.
On a group of people, and what has happened is you don't have an entrepreneurial class in these communities because they don't have the incentive, they don't have the ambition anymore because they've been dependent on government. government jobs and government subsidies.
Hold on. Doc, are you being facetious saying this, or are you saying it?
He's being facetious.
I want him to say it, Doc. Relax. What difference does it make?
If blacks are saying it, if blacks are saying it, and they've been saying it for years.
No, it's not blacks are saying it. It's white liberals that are saying it to blacks, and blacks are buying into it. It's not that way, because we had plenty of professionals. We had plenty of business people, but this is what happens. When they tie up with certain of the majority community, they beat them out of those businesses. And they take advantage of them, and they do things to them because they have the majority of the market. And so,
that's correct.
There's a way to do it. It's to get away from your political structure to keep it happening that way. That's why I was saying. I didn't know whether you was a representative from the DMC or not.
Well, what's the DMC? Are you talking about the Democratic Party?
Yes, I am. Forget about that.
Look,
yeah, well,
I've been on black shows. I've been telling blacks, you can make it.
I'm going to put your ticket to the house.
And I've also told them, take a look at the people who graduated from your colleges and what has happened. They say, no, you can't do it. You can't do it. Whitey's always in the way. So when I say, well, how's Whitey try to keep you from getting your particular job or anything? And then they keep going on and on and rambling on. So look, you people have won. All right?
But a lot of those people are just hired paid slaves. They work for someone else. They don't operate a business of their own.
No kidding.
You know,
it's hard to have a conversation about social engineering with individuals like Joe, you know, and Sticks. And hey, man, first of all, they're not going to know any history, any of the successes or failures of the black community, which, you know, it's always puzzling how when you deal with social science, everybody uses science until it comes to the black experience, right? So everybody's looking at taking a snapshot of the black community right now, saying, hey, man, what y'all get y'all lady ass up and do something? Without taking a look at all of the history and what we've accomplished and what has happened to all of that, your average successful business empire is 50 years old, 50 to 100 years old. Now, when you consider what happened to the, in order for blacks to have an empire, now you're talking about businesses that would now be at least 75 to 100 years old. Where are all of those businesses at? What happened to them? Because that's the only way you're talking about building an empire. You can't look at the black community and say within the last 5 years, where are your empires at? Where are your, you know,
Michigan, all we have is funeral homes that last that long.
And barbecue joints.
Not even the barbecue joints last that long. You got one or two restaurants and one or two clubs.
And the majority of the Chinese own the make the sell, but the barbecue chicken is sold by Asians.
Yeah. So when you get to these white folks on here who are taking a snapshot of the community, just looking at where the community is now, and the first thing coming out of their mouth is, you guys are lazy. Yeah, you need to get up off your butts.
Joe, what's wrong with that advice?
It's
a Chinese-owned soul food joint in your Harlem.
So what's wrong with the advice of blacks getting off their ass and making it? Now, you're talking about 50, 75 years of empire. That
but what,
me to
but
be
what we're saying
to
is you don't understand social psychology. You don't understand group psychology.
Let me ask you a question. You're trying to be deep with these simple-minded people, and it don't work.
Can blacks make it today, or can blacks not make it today?
They don't know anything about systematic racism. They don't know any of that, so you're trying to be deep with them and explain that to them, and they're not interested.
All right, so can blacks make it today, or can they not make it today?
What's happening, Joe, is you have individual blacks who come from very good homes who are making it on an individual basis. But as a group, they're not doing well.
I'm not asking if they're not doing it. I'm asking, can you, if you wanted to, if you wanted to put in the hard work, and like white people or Asians, can you do it today?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. No.
Right.
Yes.
We got to keep rambling around and around for.
Yes.
Jamaica,
yes.
Jamaica.
Yes. Yes.
Well,
no, not in America,
it
will not happen.
Oh, it can't happen.
But you also have to understand that America is under a system of white supremacy when it comes to business and economics. And if you're talking about trying to promote things that are black and are African in nature,
the
chances are that the economic system is not
going to
respond to that.
Yeah, but wait. I think Joe is going back to saying that we need to be honest with ourselves and say that if we want to make it, we have to have basically the example of going to the people who are succeeding and asking them humbly, how did you succeed and what did you do to do it?
But the reason why you see deficiencies in people's ability to make
that?
It
why can't you
is because they suffer from a group psychology, which is prevalent among their people in their own communities.
So why are blacks bringing your kids into the world if they're going to fail?
Yeah.
They shouldn't. I've asked Chris Wilson, so you shouldn't be procreating right now.
Well, actually, the abortion rate among black women is the highest among any minority group in the country.
It
so
sure
you have
is.
A lot of black women who are not bringing life into the world.
It sure is. Maybe you should have bought some more then, according to your philosophy.
Look, if you're trying to be sarcastic about the plight of an entire people, then it's not working. What we're trying to do is explain to you in an academic way what's happening to a whole minority in the country.
That 400 years of whatever you're talking about, if you subtract 400 from 2014, what do you get? I got a question for you, okay, instead of rambling around.
We're just putting that much energy on him. He's in no position
don't worry about me.
But the thing, wait. People, the thing that you don't understand, I agree with Joe, is as a black man and as a person that tried to help the black people and tried to, I've told you that, and I'm going to tell you again the story. I've done a course that cost $5,000, decided to help a brother, a close friend of mine, give it to him for free, the course. That was $5,000 because he said, I can't make money and everything. Let me just finish.
See, everybody goes back to their personal experience. And we're trying to talk in a broad sense about a serious problem. Your individual experiences aren't going to help us solve the problem.
Hey, both of you.
Let Stanley please finish his point.
Let me just finish. And I did that, and I gave that. I'm sorry, I like people. 2 months later, that person didn't do nothing, but I still have followers in my and Jeff could say the same thing, and Tracy could say the same thing. And wait.
How about letting them finish?
Let me just finish. I just want to make my point. People who are successful, who want to help the black people, I'm sorry, a lot of black people are lazy and don't want to do the things that we need to do.
Think you heard say before that you happen to come from Haiti, right?
Yeah.
Oh, here come another accuser. Hey, John, why are you
But don't you realize that when the Haitians first came to Florida, most of the people who were the governmental officials in Florida said that they don't want these people in the state of Florida because they have HIV. They're lazy. But the vast majority of them are going to cause crimes in Florida. All of this happened when the Haitians tried to come over into Florida. So basically, all of those things that you're saying this other person is guilty of, those things were said about the people of Haiti as well.
Silly. Let John talk for a second. Michigan, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was seeing if you were still there. I got no time to be trying to explain social science to Jillian. And they have absolutely no interest
in
that.
I have no experience in this. So I can't walk
I don't
in your shoes. Nah,
yeah,
hard
I,
work.
I don't understand.
Let him finish. Let him finish.
Listen, let me tell you something.
It's not something.
You should question
you know, you've got black people who are maybe, you've got black people who are black themselves and they're like calling you and they're willing to help you, but you're not willing to help yourself.
You should question his motives. What is he even doing on the line?
That's bullshit. You're a born loser.
You see?
You're a born loser.
Hey, Joe.
So that tells you,
you know,
hey, Joe, nothing, John. You're a born loser, too.
Look,
when
the majority of the Italians first came to America in the early 20th century, they weren't even considered to be white people. Had to wait almost 50 years to be called white.
And a lot of the northern Europeans
considered them to be people who were disease carriers.
And
it was caused
point,
crime.
Other than the fact that this white prejudice, white supremacy,
and also a lot of the Italians had a stigma on them for a long time.
But the thing is when you get these guys like that, they are you still there? Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
When you get these guys like that, they say these stupid things because they take nothing into consideration about what
right.
it takes. What
right.
it takes to get to rise above. Now, whatever I got to do, if I got to go with bloody fingers, I'm going to rise above it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so, but a lot of people are so deep down and so demoralized, they don't have the idea what it takes to get up and move forward like that.
That's correct. Look,
Jack,
I agree with you. Listen. You think about this. If you take a people, and at every turn, you have a different set of rules or a different strategy where you can stand out what they're doing. You're driving people crazy, man. And then and on the other hand, you're giving out a red, white, and blue flag saying, hey, you're one of us. Black folks are delusional now, man. They don't know which way to go. One day you're giving them a flag saying, I'm one of you, and then you got all of the institutions working against that certain thing.
That's right. You sure do. And the thing is they, whatever little thing happens to somebody else is a huge thing for you because you don't have the ability to pay your way out.
Or
you don't have the support of family that will give you 20 cents to go in the business or to stay there. And that's the bottom line, and because it's been so intrinsic, we always want to blame ourselves, and I don't blame all of us.
You can't
do
that.
But I do blame the ones that have gotten off their behinds, rise to a certain level, and then they let the devil use them to keep the other ones down.
But you know why I think you can't blame them because you're assuming that they have a race based or an affinity to their race, which America teaches the antithesis to that. As far as blacks is concerned, they say, "Hey, man, you're just an American. Just be an American. You're just an American. You know, you help America. You give back to America. You see, so." You know, you can't be mad at them when they go up and they're not pro-black. How can you expect them to be pro-black when they never talk to be pro-black?
But the thing is, I agree with Jeff. We need to go back to have the motivation and everything, and to have it depends what kind of philosophy you have in life. If you have a philosophy in life that money is very rare, you're going to be scared. If you have the philosophy that you can make it and you can have as much money as you want, you're not going to be the same way. That depends on the philosophy from the start. If you believe that it's rare, you're not going to make it here. You're not going to make it.
Well, the one thing that I would say is for all of us that I'm putting my car in the shop at the same time.
Oh, okay.
We have to be vigilant in speaking out on it and speaking against the practices that keep us in those positions. Because I realize that the crutch for the black community is government program. But at the same time, there has to come a time when you don't use that crutch. You know,
once your legs being cut off, you need a crutch to take the place of your other leg. So if you pull that crutch now, when you ain't got but one leg, hell, you're gonna fall over.
I agree. I don't want to take it.
Okay.
I don't want to take the crutch.
It would be catastrophic if you take the crutch now when the black community ain't got but one leg. Now, so the question would be, if not the crutch is the problem is, is the black community ever going to grow its leg back? Now, that's the question. Now, if somebody say yes, and if I'm giving me a formula for that, then to me, that's giving me some faith-based stuff. Is the black community going to grow its leg back, and how?
Well, we have to overcome the craziness first, and then I think we won't have a problem. But we have to start teaching and crying out whether the people receive. A lot of my friends don't like to talk to me anymore because I keep telling them, quit. You know, bending over and getting screwed. That's what you're doing. You're getting screwed, and you just are happy to do it, obviously. So I can't get to that. I cannot get to that. But the thing is, if we're not diligent, I'd rather not get invited to somebody's picnic and party, as long as they tune into my show, which they do, and they get ticked off, even though when I tell them, you got to stop this craziness.
Jeff, can
you
hear me?
Stop. Yeah, I hear you.
This is Alabama, man. I've been listening for a while. That last guy, that guy that called up, called people born losers.
Well,
he's part of the problem, Jeff. I mean,
of course.
When you can't understand the actual inner workings of why. Now, individually, I can talk to you and say, hey, you need to get it together, this, that. But when you step back and look on a macro scale at the black community, then you have to be willing to admit some things have been done to hinder the rise of the black community. And I think it's really disingenuous for him to just say, you know what, you're just all losers, and not really look at his grandfather, his ancestors came over here and what they did and what certain people, and probably judging from the way he talked, I think they probably was standing there giving, you know, because I read accounts of people getting hung. You got 10,000-15,000 people sitting out there chanting it on. So everybody wasn't innocent. I'm sorry. And they had 8 to 10 different kids at that time. So a lot of these people that sit and say that had called with that callousness is coming from a different place.
The thing about Joe, I've
heard Joe on other shows. He actually knows about social science, but that's why I say you have to check the motive of some white people, especially when you know them, and for him to get on here and be facetious like that. So, you know, the average white, of course, like I said, they're looking at the black community just as today and saying, hey, man, let's all get it together, which, listen, again, like I said, every other society and every other group in this culture, when you're dealing with something that is happening in more than one place at the same time and at the same scale, it's always social science. It's always it's looked at it as a systematic problem, right? So, in other words, you don't run to St. Louis and say, hey, man, put up your pants. You don't run over to Detroit and say, hey, man, put up your pants. They're running to say, that's what we're saying we want us to do in the black community. When clearly there's a systematic problem, so you go to the woods. But they don't want us to go to the woods. They just want you to get out on the corners and man, pull up your pants and go get a job.
Correct.
See? That's crazy.
You're absolutely correct, but like I said, if we don't continue this, and I appreciate everybody's voice, even when I don't agree with you, we argue, but the thing is we're arguing points, and when we argue points, we can start working the things out to where I agree with part of your point or all of your point or none of it, but. And let's agree on something that we can work on together. Because I hate this, I'm in this camp, so I can't talk to you. The foolishness that we do. And
I've already told you that I believe that the black community is sound, and nobody still has offered a formula that says it's going to be any otherwise. But let me say this, I'll say it again. If you don't see a resurgence of the specific things within these black enclaves, and the main one is a resurgence of black entrepreneurship.
Right.
I'm saying that's possible now. But I'm saying if there's going to be a chance, that's what you're going to have to see first, a resurgence of black entrepreneurship. And it really doesn't have to be in technology. It can be in service, the retaking of the service communities and things of that nature. If you
don't
give me a formula where you're going to have that, you're done.
You're absolutely correct. But my brothers, I'm gonna have to get back with you. I gotta see about this vehicle. So we'll talk.
All right.
That was him making all that noise.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Hey,
we do a lot of talking, but nobody really, what's
I wanna ask you guys something. Can y'all hear me? Am I on?
Yeah, we hear you.
Yeah.
there's a story that the government's really, really going all out to cover up right now, and that's all the smuggling that's going on at the border of bringing in people from the Middle East here, Pakistan, Somalia, Iraq, Yemen, and these aren't good people. These are really, really bad people. These are the terrorists, and they're associated with terror gangs from their countries. And they're in prisons here, and there's the people who are smuggling them in Middle Eastern too. They're going in from those countries. They go to Brazil. They come up through Central America and across Mexico, and they're brought in. And in San Antonio, the federal court that's in San Antonio, there's indictments brought against them all the time. So I just wonder, if there's another terrorist attack on this country, I mean, how's that going to make you feel about America? I mean, how did you feel after 9/11? How did the black community feel about 9/11?
Let me jump on this one. The thing is this, I believed it at first. I did. And I think a lot of black people did believe it at first. But if you really just look at this story and what happened, I think the truth is kind of flawed as far as what the gay people, as far as what they call a terrorist attack. And if you look at the financial records of what took place prior to 9/11, I think
that's
a big lie.
That's not my question.
I know that's not your question, but black people feel like it's not their fight, especially when it's a lot of lies within the whole story that is called terrorism. I mean, there's a lot of black people that are truthers that don't believe what you when you say terrorism. They don't. They just don't. And they don't just say terrorism.
I'll give you my opinion. I think it's similar to Alabama's in this sense. I don't think it's almost like just as the white community could give a damn about black on black crime, like in Chicago and in Baltimore, whites, you don't see whites crying about black on black crime. I would say the majority. Well, it was a bad thing. I think the majority of blacks really had no feelings either way about 9/11. If there's another, I mean, of course, if one of your family members are in it, of course you'd be sad. But collectively, I don't think blacks really gave a damn.
Well, according to what you're saying, then I don't see how blacks can understand the way everybody's lives have changed in America because of 9/11. We
everybody's
have
what that says?
Lives.
Well, lies.
Okay.
Our lives, our livelihoods, the way our daily lives, our freedoms in America, all of our lives were altered because of 9/11. We have far less freedoms. We have liberty, but we don't have the freedoms we had before then.
But these bills were drafted up in 2 weeks, which is these people knew this. They did.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, that's the conspiracy side of Alabama. I mean, if you stick with the core is...
No, this is fact, though. I'm just talking about the fact. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, but I'm
but
saying that as far as in context of blacks, you know, just like when blacks fight in wars and then come home and get spit in the face by the same white boy they were standing next to helping the same rise. I mean, that could drive a person crazy. So... the issues of blacks don't even see when America gives taxes, that's their issue. Only those blacks who think they're Americans, who are delusional, but the average black, they don't care.
But hold on, Michigan. So when the dollar collapsed, we go to all these wars, the dollar collapsed, and all this stuff happened. They sell a nuke off, the dollar go, all that. Blacks going to get thousands of blacks, millions of blacks are going to die. They'll be the first ones to die because we're the weakest. So it behooves them to have their game together. Now, even although I believe it's fake, I still believe you need to have your game tight. That's just my personal opinion.
But your game is not America's game. I guess that's my point. In other words, your issues, to me, America's issues are not black issues. That's my point. Maybe I should have put it that way.
If you don't feel like you're part of America, then how do you expect to succeed in America?
I'm not trying to succeed in America.
That's a real interesting question because Asians come here. They are part of their Asian culture, Japanese and Chinese culture. Hispanics, Mexicans are part of their Hispanic culture. So when you say that, it's like, yeah, they come in and they facilitate, they do certain things, but they still are loyal to where they come from. It's blacks that don't have anywhere because we don't know what let's go test our DNA. But other than that,
no, you're wrong. Your premise is wrong. They come here and they're happy to be here because of the plentiful goods that we have here, the food, the medical care. They come here and they are loyal to America. You're wrong about that.
No,
friends from Taiwan and China, and they don't feel that way at all.
These Mexicans that think that, hold on, so they claim that Arizona, Texas, and Nevada and California is part of Texas, is part of Mexico.
You can overtalk me. That's fine. Now, you changed what we were talking about. We were talking about Chinese and those people, and then you bring Mexicans. Mexicans and
I said Latinos too.
Are different. They want to change America.
The foreigners that are coming here are coming here for the most part for opportunities, ways that they can exploit a free market capitalist
about?
System. What do you mean? What am I talking about?
Changing it up. Look,
you said they come in because they want
to
change America. Huh?
It really comes down to two concepts. but from the 20th century and into the 21st century, there is this continuous struggle between those who want a strong central government and those who want complete free markets. That right there, there is a in it, what it really in abstract terms, what it boils down to is tyranny and freedom. That's what it really boils down to, because when you have a strong central government all over the world, it ends up being tyrannical.
Well, okay, now you're changing the point. Now you have jumped from what foreigners are here to do to a free government or tyranny. Now you changed the subject.
Because, look, if you don't think La Raza is a tyrannical organization, which is going to, I'm trying to pound this into y'all's heads.
Wait a minute. How can I finish? The position of black folks in America is already set. So you're not telling anybody any rocket science. I mean, what do you mean you're trying to pound something into somebody's head? Blacks know that position in America, and it's not going to change. Are you saying you have a friend to change it?
I guess she's gone.
Shit.
No, I didn't want to interrupt him. I wouldn't want to be.
Okay, and I'm sorry for interrupting you.
You asked me a question. Yeah.
Go ahead, ma'am.
You see what I'm saying? It's not rocket science. I'm just trying to understand what it is that you want. Or how do you think that you're going to change your life if you keep demanding that the government do this and the government do that, when it's the government who created the situation that blacks are in the first place?
I agree with you. I agree with you 1,000%. Nobody's saying that the government didn't do that. And what I'm saying is I don't feel like – this is the thing. True enough, you made the correct analogy earlier.
Hold on,
Michigan. Let me finish at one point. Let me finish at one point.
Okay.
Well, I'll agree with you right there. What I'm saying is, the crutch is also the cancer. It's like we can't have both of them. Like, it's like, okay, you giving me a check every month is not going to incentivize me to go out and start a business. If I start this business and I make too much money, then, you know, if I do a business, I'm going to do it on the side, and I'm going to hustle, but I'll never be able to go borrow a loan, or I'll never be able to go do certain things that will really empower me. I'll just be nickel and dime and making $20,000, $30,000 a year doing it. That's going to keep you down. You got to – the crutch has to be taken, and I know we're going to fall. I agree. But we sustained ourselves for the first 300 and some odd years in this country without all this stuff. And we were making progress, which you have well documented yourself. So
yep.
I think we do need to have that stuff. We do need to be weaned off of it. I ain't going to say just cold turkey, because that's cold-blooded for a lot of people. But we do need to be weaned off of these government programs, so these broad boys will pull their pants up and start being more, you know, it'll just change the whole dynamic of a dating relationship. Once you change that, as far as what a woman will take from a guy, then you'll change the whole community. But as far as what she's talking about with these Mexicans coming across the border, any other race.
Yeah. And you're correct. But blacks, there's not much blacks will be able to do about any of that macro, you know, those macro issues anyway.
But I think the point she was making about La Raza is, you know, they are a tyrannical organization. I mean, They're not looking out for the best interests of the American quote unquote free market system. Their goal is to impose a, you know, socialistic society. I mean, that's point blank, you know.
Yeah, that's true. And they're powerful. They're very powerful and organized.
Well, I guess I'm not debating whether that's true or false, but. I'm saying, as far as the black plight, what does that have to do with the black folk?
Because La Raza's not interested in your problems. They're only Well, when La Raza gets more power in government, what are you going to do? What are you going to do to counter that? Because your congressional black caucus right now is pretty impotent. Your congressional black caucus has sold you out.
Correct. I agree with that.
Yeah. I think more than the president, you know, who's president, it's more important who's in Congress. And I wish that we would vote everybody out of Congress and start all over. I think people like John McCain, look at what's happened to Arizona, you know, and he's been a senator for how long? You know, it seems like since forever. And, you know, the prize of the Democratic Party is to turn Texas, you know, into a Democratic state. That's one of the big reasons they're – and you talked about them being Mexicans. It's not just Mexicans. It's all these other people, too, that are coming across the border. These shipments of these people are coming in every 72 hours. Now, a day is 24 hours long. So every 3 days, these shipments are coming in from Central America. And those people from Central America aren't all children. The media, the government is controlling what you see in the media. Right now you're seeing little children. But 80% of them are over 13 years old. And most of those are males. And these are not kids that, you know, leave it to Beaver and, you know, Wally and the Beeve. These are bad kids.
I agree with you 1,000%. I don't. Nobody's arguing with. We don't. I think the government. I think the government is screwing, making a big problem for every community, not just the black, but the blacks especially. We gonna feel it within 5 years when they get finished doing all this stuff they're doing. Within 5 years, our numbers gonna skyrocket as far as everything that's bad, every measurable dynamic that they measure is gonna skyrocket because they put these Hispanics in. And black people think, okay, good, we're going to start winning more elections. Stupid. Stupid.
Yeah.
These people ain't thinking about you.
Well,
like Diva. Diva wants these Hispanics in so they can help her win and put people like Barack Obama back in there, Hillary Clinton. It's like in the movie when the monster, the guy that tries to talk to the monster, he always gets killed. He walks. That's Diva. That's a lot of black people. They walk up. No, we can communicate with him.
Well, but you know, and you're correct, brother. But you know, I don't even blame them because, you know, where does this mind state come from? Really, the inclusion of mind state stems out of that whole civil rights movement, and it keeps boiling back down to this issue of when it comes to politics. You know, blacks do not have a clear political identity, you see? And so is that Diva's going to fall? I mean, where did they get that thinking from? Alabama didn't just, you know, the mailman didn't drop it off.
It came out of a lot of marching and begging to get – we've been begging – last 50 years. The civil rights was a big begs fest, if you ask me.
Right.
Begging
for
all we needed
correct.
Was equal right. I don't care if you don't want me in your business. Screw that. We don't want that.
Right.
That
right.
killed a lot of black businesses. I wish they could have still stayed black only. I wouldn't have had a problem with it. That doesn't mean I hate
right.
my people. But see, that's the problem. And I think Renoco Rashidi made a point. He said, look, man, for a race not to act in his own self-interest, to tell a race to act in his own self-interest is not racist. Because it's like, and then when you see other form of people doing it, I think it doesn't, like if I see a Hispanic guy, like there's this Asian guy that came out and said, if I hire two people and I see a black guy and an Asian guy, I'm going to hire the Asian guy because I want to help my people. I don't see that as I was like, okay, well, fine. Well, that means when I get a chance, we need to act accordingly. We need to do the same. I don't think that's race. I don't think that's racist or hatred. I don't.
I don't see that as being racist or hatred either. I mean, you know, but you know, the liberal would say that's the case.
You know, but what this country really is still suffering from is Reconstruction. You know, Reconstruction did more harms to black people than the you know, then I think all of slavery did, because the things that came out of Reconstruction, you all know this. I don't have to tell you anything new. But I wanted to make another point. You know, the opium production in Kenya and Uganda and Nigeria has been on the rise since these wars in the Middle East. It's been continually increasing since, you know, the early part of this century. And in, I know in Kenya, the opium market is run by the Italian mafia. In Brazil, it was closely tied to that. And opium production is on the rise in Colombia and Mexico and Central America. And so it just seems logical to assume that that's one reason when you talk about this influx of immigrants in the country and how it's going to affect blacks. The way it's going to affect blacks is it's going to put more of you in prison. It's going to keep this, you know, prison system, especially private prisons, are now suing state governments for not keeping their beds filled. And so, you know, we've had this increase in heroin and all sorts of drugs. And this, I mean, it's no, it's like pot's not even relevant anymore. The big bucks is in heroin production. And that's what's happening. The Central American governments have been, Obama and Hillary Clinton have supported the Marxist governments that have taken over in those Central American countries where these immigrants right now are coming from. So there's something much bigger here than just opening up our borders, because we should take in more people to take care of them. They're looking for better jobs and everything. No, it's directly tied to the opium production, the increase in the opium production in different parts of the world. It's a drug route that's being opened up. We open our borders, we're opening these drug routes.
But if you think about it, think about it really. You know, they want to legalize drugs, marijuana and recreational stuff. But here's the thing. They want to keep you from having too much sugar. They want to keep you from having all these fats and all the rest of this stuff. But they want you to be a zombie on drugs.
That's because we have a tyrannical government. Government is turning tyrannical. It's turning against our best interest as human beings. That's what I talk about, our freedoms. We have liberty. Oh, they'll give us liberty to buy drugs, and, you know, they'll give us food stamps. We have liberty to buy groceries and things like that. But our freedoms and our choices are being limited.
Yeah, that's about the size of it. That is about the size of it. But for me, you know, the big thing for me is the fact that, you know, don't tell me that I have to do something, because if I don't, if by me doing it, it takes care of somebody else. That bugs me. That really kind of gets on my nerves, because I don't think you should take away from one man to give to another, for sure. If he wants to give it, let him do it on his own free will.
Well, if we truly had free markets, that's the way it would work. That's why it really boils down to a war between tyranny and liberty, you know, and to have free markets, which we don't have. You know, we could have open borders, and we could have legalized drugs. You know, this is more of a libertarian way of thinking, but, you know, if I want to buy something, I should be able, you know, and I work for it, I should be able to buy it.
Yeah,
anyway.
That's where the libertarian comes in, you know, just live free and, you know, don't bother.
But I think, I mean, I don't know if you're, you know, I don't know really what color anybody is. I may just be boring the black guys on the show to death, but I guess I'm just trying to make a point. I think when I hear black people talk all the time about black issues constantly, and they're not focusing on what's really happening, is that these liberties that are being, our freedoms that are being taken away from us, is happening to everybody. You know, when Obama says spread the wealth, he doesn't mean spread the wealth in the United States. He means taking the wealth from the United States and spreading it everywhere, because he considers even the poorest black person or poorest white person or Asian or whatever in this country to be richer than people that live in, you know, they have to walk in Uganda, they'd have to walk 2 miles to get a gallon of water and an old milk jug. You know, We're rich compared to the rest of the world. And I've even heard Pianki say it. People don't believe about poverty in this country. And we do have poverty in America. We have many children in America who are malnourished and underweight and smaller brain sizes than we do obese children in this country. But the media and Michelle Obama don't want to talk about that.
Well, here's the problem you run into, and I think we had this discussion before. You know, I understand where the malnourishment comes from. The malnourishment comes from, you know, you give folks, you know, food stamps to go out and buy food, and they buy tons of stuff that has no nutritional value whatsoever. That's where the malnutrition comes in. It's not because they don't have the means. They just don't have the desire to do what they need to do. You know, I've been to foreign countries and seen what true poverty is. I've been to, you know, Central America, and when I went out on Liberty, I was told that I could not take more than 5 lempiras with me, which basically equal to about $2. Couldn't take it out on Liberty with me because they didn't want us to wreck the economy down there, because what I was making, you know, during one pay period, you know, that's what they made their whole entire year. Okay?
Yeah.
So you know, I've seen poor. I've seen poor. And me at my poorest level in my whole entire life, and I'm almost 50 years old, is way more affluent and prosperous than some of the folks that I saw, than the majority of the folks that I saw down in Honduras.
So. Well, I was looking up the aid that we send to Central America. It's amazing. We didn't just send food. We also distribute lots and lots of money through different aid organizations within those Central American countries.
Yep.
And I was reading today, we send a boatload of aid to the Palestinians to
mm-hmm.
– You know, if people complain all the time about the money we send to Israel, we also fund the Palestinians.
Quite a bit.
We're funding both sides.
Yeah, but that doesn't you know, make any difference to those folks that have an agenda. You know,
that's
the point. They don't care.
Yeah. My husband has this saying. He says, you know, nobody really wants equality. They just want their turn, because I think that man, you know, starts out good, but man ends up very corrupt. And when we talk about just one group of people, you know, being more deserving or less deserving, that's what everybody does. In every culture all over in the history of mankind, that's what we've done. And it's just now that we've got so many people in the world, and what is the population supposed to double, like, in another 40 years?
Yeah.
Like in China. I mean, we have too many people for the planet to support them.
Nah, I don't think so. I think we'll be able to sustain it. But then again, you know, that's one of the stories that I've heard, you know, spoken before. But, you know, my thing is this. Arrogant or selfish or whatever, but I don't want to be equal to anybody. You know, that's not the way God made me. You know,
no,
I just want to be, because we can go out on the basketball court, and I don't know who you are, but you know, we might go on the basketball court. You put a thorough thrashing on me, you know, and you know, we're not equal.
I just want the world to be better.
Yeah.
It's always government. I think that people as individuals, you know, in my neighborhood, it's every nationality in the world was in my neighborhood. People can get along. I think it's people one-on-one or in small groups. We all get along with each other. It's this group think and this group thought that, you know, makes people crazy. You know, people think that the Democrats are going to save us, the Republicans are going to. It's like we're replacing we're expecting this big group of people, like some big, they have these powers to change everything, and they don't. And I think we've been brainwashed into believing that government's going to fix this shit. And government has just gotten worse and worse. Government changed. You know, we had a good school system up until the early 70s in this country. We don't anymore, you know. And smart people are sending their kids to private schools. They're not in these public, only good public. There are good public schools, but you have to live in a pretty good neighborhood to go to a good public school. But I really fear for this country the way kids are, the lack of education they're getting. There was a lady that called in earlier and was talking about disabled children going to school and how you have to have an advocate to fight for them. She's absolutely correct. We have to have advocates for children going to public schools if they have disabilities of any kind in this country. And I have a relative going through that right now.
My granddaughter, I've got a granddaughter that's autistic. And the school system that she was in, you know, we basically had to fight to get her an IEP, you know, so she could get the services that she needed. Now, that only came about because my wife's a teacher. If she hadn't have been a teacher, it would have been a little bit more difficult to do because she knew how the system worked. Now, you know, my granddaughter she's thriving. So, you know, and some classes she's in with the regular kids, and some classes, you know, she's in what they call self-contained, you know.
Right.
Because she has her special issues. But I wouldn't go in there and advocate and say, well, my granddaughter needs to be in this class with the rest of the kids because she's normal. No. No, no, no. My granddaughter is not normal. She's not normal by the standards that are set up by the school system. So, therefore, she needs to have some things done that's different from the rest of the kids. And the quicker people understand that, the better off they are, you know. Some kids do not function very well in that type of environment, you know. Some kids need their medication. Some kids are perfectly fine. But it's up to you know, the system, you know, wants to lump everybody in the same class and make sure everybody gets the same cookie-cutter education. But we all know that we're not the same. So I can't educate you the same way, you know, you educate me. Yeah, and that's up to the teacher. We got to give the teacher the ability to do that, you know, instead of tying their hands with, you know, with a sorry-ass bureaucracy, you know, that the lawyers have created.
Oh, the No Child Left Behind is such a crock. It's like No Child Left Behind, Affordable Care Act. They mean the exact opposite of what they're, you know, they're titled. Did we bore the other guy, Alabama? Are you still on there?
No, I think he must have got off.
Yeah, we start boring. Are you in Texas by any chance?
No, I'm actually in South Carolina.
Oh. Yeah. Well, it's just amazing me this national. I think we're at a crisis situation because. People just are being lied to about, the whole country is being lied to about who's coming across the border right now. They're not mostly children.
Well,
they're mostly over 13.
I've been saying this for years, you know. You got to control who's coming in your country. And the thing that's not being said, and this is where, you know, groups like the RASA, you know, the quote-unquote Hispanic advocacy groups, you see, they don't get the same scrutiny as those individuals that come from the Caribbean. I mean, like the Haitians, the Dominicans, the, you know, those from other countries. They don't get that kind of scrutiny because I know folks that came here and they found out that they were undocumented and they were sent back home promptly from Haiti, but yet a Mexican can stay here all they want, you know? So there's a definite, you know, a definite discrimination against folks. But, you know, hey, that's a whole nother animal.
Hey, let me tell you, there are Mexican men living here in this Texas. They have bought a Social Security number. And so, you know what I mean by buying a, it's an illegal Social Security number, but it belongs to somebody else. And there are cases where the person whose Social Security number they're using is actually still alive and owes child support. And so when the child support is taken out of the illegal paycheck, he doesn't mind. He doesn't mind. Because he's still making more money than he would have. I mean, this goes on a lot. People, I mean, there's all kinds of programs. I mean, on the one hand, mother's getting the money. She doesn't realize it's coming from the Mexican, sole or ex-husband, you know, Social Security number.
That is crazy.
Oh, it's a lot of stuff like that going on. But, you know, under the Affordable Care Act, illegals can't, they don't qualify for that. So, and I think it's, they have to be here 10 years or something. But they, so what do they do? They're going to go on Medicaid, and in states like Tennessee that didn't expand their Medicaid coverage, there are working poor people in Tennessee who make too much money to qualify for assistance under the Affordable Care Act, you know, a subsidy. But they still are at below the poverty level. So the states that didn't expand their Medicaid coverage before the Affordable Care Act was enacted, those states, those people are going to get screwed big time.
Yep, that's the way it works.
I was reading for this one couple, been married 30-some years, they actually had to separate in order to have different domiciles in order to keep to get care under the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, they got to have to get divorced.
Yeah. But, man, Tracy's show today was all over the place. It was.
that's true.
When John gets a talking boy, you can't get a word in edgewise.
Which one is John?
John is the guy from Philadelphia.
Philadelphia?
He's
hard to control.
He's hard to control. I used to talk with John and Bianchi on another show that's not on anymore. We used to have some good conversations. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to have to boogie.
Me too.
It has been a pleasure talking to you.
You too. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.